Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good morning and good afternoon, depending on which coast you're on. It's the Sports Addicts, and with me today is Chris Belenna from The Blitz. How are you doing today, Chris?
I'm doing good, Jerry. Once again, thanks for having me on the show.
You got it. Anything, like I told you before, any time is good. You have the time,
good.
I have the time, always.
Nice. Good stuff, good stuff. Looking forward to talking about the NFC.
Well, the NFC is this week has had some interesting surprises along the way. So I'll try to fill in as much of it as I can as we go through the different teams. What we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and start off with NFC East.
Okay.
First team on the agenda, the Washington Redskins.
Okay.
What do you see with the Washington Redskins?
Well, the one thing I like to see with Washington, they finally, Shanahan finally has his, franchise quarterback. And I'm going to assume he's going to come back, 100% next year. But I'd like to see him surround him with a little bit more weapons. With that being said, I could see them going after a wide receiver. Pierre Garçon, they made the move to get him. But Santana Moss is aging. Joshua Morgan really wasn't a part of that offense. Leonard Hankerson, I wouldn't really say he's a threat. They could really use that, another wide receiver to help with the growth of RG3. With that being said, they could also use a tight end. Fred Davis, he's a free agent. I don't know if they're going to re-sign him or not. I know he's coming off an injury. And Logan Paulson is not your franchise tight end, so I would say they would need an upgrade there for sure. So, but other than that, they're set at running back, although, I don't say it's a need, but it would be a nice, weapon to get a Darren Sproles type, running back out of the backfield that they could utilize. With that being said, I go on to the defensive side, and they just need help in the defensive secondary. I mean, you look at their cornerbacks, Richard Crawford, Josh Wilson. These aren't guys who are going to shut down your Calvin Johnsons or your Roddy White, or players like Anquan Boldin. Teams that Washington, or even Victor Cruz for that matter, teams Washington will have to go through to get deep into the playoffs. So they need to really upgrade that secondary.
I agree. Also, Fred Davis has made it clear that he has narrowed it down to two teams. He made this clear back on Thursday. It's going to be the Redskins or the Cleveland Browns, and the Cleveland Browns is going to make a push to get him. So Washington needs to put some focus on if they want him back, they need to put some focus on him now because
correct.
It's going to get ugly. It's going to get ugly if they don't.
Well, exactly.
In addition, despite general manager Bruce Allen's creativity, the cap penalties will restrict the Redskins' ability to spend this offseason. So with whatever they can free up, they should be able to upgrade at both corner and safety. Washington allowed 7 yards per pass per attempt last season, which was 22nd in the league. And the return of Brian Arakpo from injury should help cut down on time opposing passers have in the pocket. So, those are two immediate areas of concern, plus the tight end situation. So,
correct.
I totally agree with you on your analysis. How about the Dallas Cowboys? They've actually had some interesting situations going on so far. Oh, also Roy Helu, because of the fact that Bush went to Detroit, that knocked Roy Helu out of going to Detroit. So that helps out Washington also.
Well, right. He could be that player. He could be that third down scat type back. He's good at catching the ball out of the backfield. I don't know, he was barely on the field last year off of a pretty productive second half of his rookie season. So we'll see.
I agree. Okay, next team is the Dallas Cowboys. What do you see with the Cowboys?
Well, they're going to be switching to the 4-3 on defense, and that's the glaring need for me. I mean, you're going to have some players on defense who are going to be new to that, that defensive scheme. I mean, someone like DeMarcus Ware, who's your probably your best outside linebacker pass rusher, is now going to be a defensive end. Same thing with Anthony Spencer. So what they really need to do is they need to get some defensive tackles who are going to, instead of being run stuffers, they need to be, they need to get after a quarterback. So they're going to need players on defense to help fit the role of a 4-3 defense. I think the Tampa 2 defense. Right now, they don't have a lot of players who can do that. I mean, they're outside linebackers. You know, Kyle Wilbur and Bruce Carter, they're not going to get it done. Bruce Carter's even a free agent. So they're preset, okay in the middle with Sean Lee, but they really need to get some defensive players to fit that scheme. Also, they need a running back. Felix Jones is a free agent. It doesn't sound like they're interested in re-signing him. So they definitely need to get somebody to back up DeMarco Murray, who's shown signs of injuries. He's missed, a bunch of games in his first 2 years. So they need somebody, and Lance Dunbar's not the answer. I mean, they lost Ogletree in free agency. That's really not a loss. I never looked at him as a big impact wide receiver. And that being said, I think all year last year, they didn't have a number 3 wide receiver. They really need to get another wide receiver on that offense. Dez Bryant stepped up. Had a tremendous year. I mean, he's a man amongst boys, that guy. He's just big. But and Miles Austin, if you can stay healthy, is a good number 2. They need that number 3. They need that number 3 option to help Tony Romo, to help that offense. So right now, I think those are their primary needs at this point. Did I lose you?
Oh, sorry about that. I had my phone on mute. I was talking and not realizing I was talking on mute.
I made you speechless. I got you speechless.
Yes, you did. That offensive line is a huge need for the Cowboys.
Yep.
They need, they need tackle, they need guard, they need center. And Romo's ability to move only gets worse year by year because he ages year by year.
Correct.
And they got to keep him from taking more than 36 sacks that he suffered in 2012. And the only position except for left tackle would be an upgrade for the Cowboys. That's the part that's really crazy. And then on the defensive side, it was, they re-signed Anthony Spencer, which was a great move on their part, but they still need to do some – they need some depth in a worse way on defense.
Yeah.
And
guys familiar with the new scheme, so that's going to be interesting to see, what they do because, the offensive line, definitely was an oversight on my part. I mean, other than left tackle, and even right tackle with Doug Free, they're in real trouble, and they need to get protect Tony Romo.
I agree. I totally agree. Romo is going to be the Romo is going to have a hard time if they don't address that offensive line. That's basically what I'm talking about. And Ogletree signed with the Buccaneers, so they lost Ogletree at wide receiver. So.
Yep.
All right, the next team up is the New York Giants. It's interesting that just 2 years ago this team won the Super Bowl, and this team is already looking at a middle-of-the-pack team.
Well, that's exactly how I was going to lead, Jerry, by saying that. It's hard to believe 2 years ago they won the Super Bowl, and they're probably the team in the NFC East, if not the entire NFC, that has the most need. They definitely need help at running back. David Wilson in his second year, I don't know if he's an every down back, so he's somebody who needs a backup, so a change of pace back, maybe a power-type runner. They need help at tight end. They lost Martellus Bennett. So now they don't have anyone to tight end. I mean, Bear Pasco, that's not really what I would say would scare a defense. And, they may lose Victor Cruz. They may lose, him to if somebody wants to pony up a first-round pick. I mean, the guy's an elite wide receiver. I don't see that happen. But if that does, they'll definitely need to replace him. Then our defense is really where the problem is. Their linebackers may be the worst in the league. I mean, Mark Herlick and Matthias Kiwanuka, Jacqueline Williams, these are guys that, should be special teamers at best. And that's really what the Giants are going into the season as their starting linebackers. That's not going to work for them if they want to be serious about, especially when they're going against teams in their division that can run the ball and have good tight ends. So, and the last spot, again, is their secondary. They've been banged up. They've got a little bit of age. I'd like to see, they signed Ryan Mundy from the Steelers. I mean, that's not an upgrade over, he's maybe a third safety, but Corey Webster had a lot of problems last year, and Terrell Thomas can't seem to stay healthy, nor can Prince Amakamara. So defensive back is, you know, where they could definitely use an upgrade along with their linebackers or defensive line. I like it. They regressed last year, but they, you know, they signed Colin Jenkins in the middle. That should help Linval Joseph and Sean Rogers, and also help Pierre Paul and Tuck get to the quarterback. So they have some work to do if they want to compete in what's going to be a tough division.
I agree. I totally agree with that. And they need to really take a look at running back, because they let Bradshaw go, as you mentioned earlier.
Right.
They're in a situation where technically they could bring Mamar Bradshaw back for less money. And I'm kind of concerned that no one actually has called this guy in to take a physical or see if he's worthy of trying to go after, because he's just sitting out there.
You know, the reason why no one's going to spend crazy money on running backs, the reason being is the NFL has proven that you can get a third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round running back, and he can be a productive NFL running back. So why spend money on a breaking down veteran, although proven, because there aren't a lot of teams that need a number one running back. There's maybe a handful that do. We're looking at backups running backs. You know, you can get a lower tier running back in the draft to fill that role for a fifth of the salary that an Amon Bradshaw, you know, would bring in. So right now, running back, they're dimes a dozen. I hate to say it. I don't know if that's the way it should be, but that's the way it is right now.
But I'm looking at it from the angle that, okay, he's out there. He doesn't have a salary, and because of his injury concerns, you can actually get him on a reduced salary.
Well, right. You can get an Amon Bradshaw at a discount based on the fact he was cut, which, you know, is definitely going to be something that will be held over him in negotiations, and the fact that he's had injury. So that being said, he could be a bargain, but the one thing about a guy like Amon Bradshaw is he will play hard for you, and that's why he gets hurt. Every time he gets the ball, he's looking to do damage. He runs like he's pissed off. So, he's not, and he's a gamer. People feed off of that type of play. So a team with an identity could use an Amon Bradshaw. A team that needs an identity in the running game could use an Amon Bradshaw, even as a backup. So I agree with that. It's kind of surprising he hasn't seen any action, but I kind of understand why.
Okay, and the other thing, too, that I was looking at is we have, maybe what the Giants are thinking is that Ruben Randall could be something similar to a Victor Cruz. Would that be a statement that could possibly be validated?
Yeah, Ruben Randall, I mean, I think he's got tremendous upside. I don't see any team, you know, paying Victor Cruz a lot of money and giving up the number one draft pick. Teams at the back of the pack, low end draft picks, you know, like 20 and plus, they'll have receivers that they don't really need to give up the number one, especially with the trade of Percy Harvin. And teams, maybe 20 and below, they're not going to give up that pick for Victor Cruz and pay the money. So I don't think he's going anywhere. But I'll tell you, Ruben Randall is going to bring given a full year under his belt as the number three. He's going to bring a new dimension to that offense, because he just looked good last year. And in the times that he played, he made big catches. He's built like Mario Manningham. He has the same number, looks just like him in the uniform. You wouldn't know it wasn't him other than the name on the jersey. But if they do lose Cruz or Nix gets hurt, Ruben Randall, I think, could be a number two, no problem whatsoever.
Okay, and just a segue, the Patriots Emmanuel Sanders signed an offer sheet to the Patriots last
Good.
Night, and Aqib Talib
signed a one-year contract.
Signed a one-year contract. With,
yep.
Right.
Yep, that's a good move for the Patriots with Sanders. I mean, the guy can't stay healthy, but he's got speed. He's made some big catches. He just has the problem of staying healthy. And, you know, as a Steeler fan, I'd say good riddance, and I'll take the third-round draft pick.
I agree. I totally agree.
Yep.
So and then finally in the NFC East, we're looking at the Philadelphia Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
On the Giants, I thought that the biggest need was that offensive line needs to get They need to gel together. They had far too many injuries. One player after the other, and they never got a chance to get on the same page.
Yeah, no cohesion there.
Absolutely. So I think the offensive guard and the offensive tackle needs to be upgraded. I think that obviously they need another running back, and then at safety they can actually benefit by bringing someone in. With Martellus Bennett gone, I think that they need to address the tight end position, even though they think that they're good without him. So we'll see where that goes. So now going on to the Eagles, we're looking at. I think on the offensive side of the ball, I think they need a tackle, and I think that on the defense they need cornerbacks. They need to fill those slots real bad. So what do you see?
Well, the offensive line was their bugaboo last year. They lost four of their five starters, I think, before the season even started. And the offense never got it together. Michael Vick wasn't able to do the things he was able to do. I still think Mike Vick has a lot of game left in him. I really like Nick Foles. I think Nick Foles, and I said this on the Blitz, I think he has the potential to be one of the top rookies. Once he gets his playing time under him, it's not going to happen right away, but at the end of their careers, I think he's going to have as a productive career as any of the rookie quarterbacks of last year because of all the weapons he has around him. Now, Philly was bad last year, but they look like they've gotten better quick. Offensive line, they need tackle upgrades. Other than left tackle, they could use an upgrade at any one of the positions, and which would give them depth. But otherwise, on offense, they're pretty set. I mean, they just traded for Aurelius Ben from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They have a backup running back for McCoy. They have two solid quarterbacks. So they're in good shape offensively. Now, on defense is really where they needed to do some work. Their defensive line, they went with Fletcher Cox last year as their first-round pick. But, you know, Isaiah Sapoga and Antonio Dixon, Cedric Thornton, these aren't guys who are going to get it done. And then they signed Carter Barwin as the left outside linebacker, and I like what I saw from Michael Kendricks and D'Amico Ryans. So they're pretty good at linebacker, which was a weakness for them for the last couple of years. But really, their defensive backs, they did some signing. They signed Kerry Williams. They signed Kenny Phillips. They signed Patrick Chung. I still don't, none of those names going to strike fear in anybody. I don't look at those guys as they're upgrades over what they had because how bad their defensive secondary was last year. But I still think they need to get somebody young in there, a playmaker, somebody who can shut down a speed wide receiver. Kerry Williams isn't that person. Brandon Boykin isn't on the other side. And then, you know, Kenny Phillips has a hard time staying healthy. Patrick Chung, I think he lost his starting job last year with New England, who was a porous defensive, had a terrible defensive secondary last year, and he couldn't stay in the starting lineup. So people are going to be able to throw on the Eagles, and the Eagles are going to be in a lot of shootouts in 2013.
I see a very similar situation. I think that the best part of the Eagles as far as from last year to this year, they actually have a defensive coordinator.
Well, right. New coach
and an actual offensive coordinator to boot. So that's a plus right off the bat. I don't know what Andy Reid was thinking at the time, except for loyalty with certain players and certain people on the staff. But other than that, I think that the Eagles may surprise a lot of people. And with the youth on this team, if it starts to gel, this could be the team that no one wants to play in this upcoming season.
Well, right, and they have superstars at key positions. They have an ex-superstar quarterback that I think has a lot of game left. You know, DeSean Jackson and Macklin. They can compete with any two wide receivers. They have probably one of the top five, when healthy, the top five running back in McCoy. So if they could stop a couple of teams, you know, they're going to be in the mix in the NFC East.
I agree. I totally agree. Now, based on the NFC East makeup at this juncture, how do you see these teams panning out 1-4?
I see it going. Right now I see Philly, Dallas, Redskins, then Giants.
Are you going 1, 2, 3, 4, or are you going 4, 3, 2, 1?
That's my order. I think Philly's the division winner, followed by Dallas. Yeah, I think Philly's a division winner this year. I think they're going to make that big a jump this year. I mean, they brought in the right, you know, some decent talent, Connor Barwin. They did upgrade their secondary, although not great. It's better than it was. They have the weapons in DeSean Jackson. You know, they have a top pick, top five pick, I believe. They're going to look to get a, you know, offensive lineman there. They're going to get the number one or number two tackle or the number one guard in that position there, which is going to immediately upgrade them in one of their biggest need positions. New coach is going to be able to use all those weapons as long as, you know, they can get some pressure on the quarterback and hold up defensively. The other teams, they have a lot of holes. I mean, they have a lot of question marks, I mean, in significant places. I mean, Washington has an aging defense and a quarterback coming back off a major injury. You have Dallas, new defense with the 4-3. You know, again, you said offensive line where, you know, Tony Romo gets knocked out of the game, that they're suspected wide receiver after their top two. And the Giants, you know, they have a lot of holes that they need to fill that they're not going to be able to accomplish with free agents and then in the draft. So they're really regressing off of, you know, 2 years ago being a Super Bowl team. They need to score points. And looking at all these teams, the Eagles are going to score the most points, which means I think they're going to win the most games in their division.
And what's really interesting is that out of the 14, the team with the least needs was the Eagles.
I agree. They did a good job this offseason so far. And they didn't have a lot of, that's what last year just didn't make any sense to me. You know, their team, I mean, they didn't get a lot of injuries. I mean, at the end of the year they did after they all kind of packed it in, but it really didn't make sense to me how bad they were based on the talent level they had. I mean, it really was disappointing. I mean, I thought they were a Super Bowl contender heading into the year. So, and a lot of those players, you know, are kind of still there, and they actually upgraded in some positions. So they could still be a team. They're going to be a team that I think is going to win that division. And I like to make bold statements too. So
That's true. And that was a good. That was a very, very good and bold statement. Yep. Hey, the NFC North. We're looking at the Green Bay Packers to start this one off. I view them with a key need at running back and maybe outside linebacker and safety. How do you see it?
Well, I think their offensive line needs some help. You know, Marshall Newhouse, you know, Everett Dietrich Smith. I mean, these aren't, you know, great players. Brian Beluga never really lived up to expectations. So I definitely think they need a running back, like you said. They were a much better offense when they had Cedric Benson last year. They were a little more balanced. Because,
I agree.
You know, you had to worry about the run. You had to worry about that bruiser, you know, and if you didn't watch the run, he was good enough to break, you know, 15. He only had to break a 70-yarder, but he'd break a 15-yarder, you know. So, and that really, you know, opened up the offense, and not that it needed to be opened up anymore, but, you know, really, you know, Aaron Rodgers was a lot more effective, and he wasn't getting knocked down as much. So they're, you know, they really need that running back. They need that offensive line upgrade, some depth at offensive line. But on the defensive side of the ball, the key to that is, you know, their defense. Their defensive line just doesn't do anything for me. They're a 3-4 defense. B.J. Raji really hasn't had the impact that he should. He's been injured. Ryan Pickett, you know. Yeah, these aren't real good. He isn't a real good 3-4 end. They're not going to – he's not a run stuffer. He's not going to take on a couple of blockers. They're pretty good at linebacker, if they can get Desmond Bishop back. But, you know, losing Charles Woodson, and now you're putting MD Jennings in as a starter. You're losing an inspirational leader, and you're losing somebody who's productive, which is a, you know, double whammy, like losing an Ed Reed. So I could see offensive line, running back, a safety, you know, to replace – Charles Woodson, and obviously they need some defensive line help. But as long as you have Aaron Rodgers, you're going to win. As long as you have him, you're going to win. So,
yeah. Breaking news, Lewis Floyd just signed with the New York Giants.
Who's
1 year contract. Lewis Murphy just signed a 1 year deal with the Giants.
Oh, boy, that's a good pick there. Yeah, I don't know if that's in preemptive strike to potentially losing Victor
Dominic
Cruz,
Hickson.
But,
no, it's actually a preemptive strike.
Dominic Hickson,
right.
And Rams Barden, they're not going to have him back probably either.
Correct. So that puts somebody in place, which means only one of them may be coming back at the very most.
Right.
But back to what we were discussing with the Packers, you're right. If they had a running back, that would make the defense respect that run, and they did do much better when Benson was in the game. So Cincinnati must have saw something because Benson seemed to get hurt again last year. And they did make a very hard charge to Steven Jackson, even though he ended up in Atlanta. But they know that is a serious need for them, and hopefully they can find the right player that can fill that need for them.
Exactly. And, again, a lot of teams, they're not going to spend the money now on free agent running backs. They're going to look for the draft to fill that need.
Right. Then next up is the Chicago Bears. I'm viewing them as with a need at wide receiver, offensive tackle. Technically, I think they need a quarterback, but that's me.
Don't you have them on one of your fantasy teams?
I do. And the other, I just have an issue with a guy who text messages his fiance to Marianne. And,
yeah, that's kind of classless. But
then mail the ring, you know.
Cool.
Other needs I think they have, which is serious needs. I think they tied in that they signed Martellus Bennett, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
And then middle linebacker and cornerback, I think, are serious needs for the Chicago Bears. What do you think?
Well, it definitely. I like Jay Cutler. I think given the proper time to throw the ball, I think he can really do some damage. I definitely think they need another wide receiver. I mean, Ashley Jeffries, could be that answer. But and Errol Bennett, I always thought, with him and Cutler both going to Vanderbilt, that they would get some kind of rapport. They did the 1 year. But they definitely need an upgraded wide receiver. They need a backup quarterback because if they're not, their offensive line isn't that great, and that's a definite area of need. But they need a backup quarterback. I mean, if Cutler goes down, their season's shot. They have nobody to back up Jay Cutler. And I think linebacker, I mean, other than Lance Briggs and you lose an Earl, potentially lose an Urlacher, I mean, there's no good names on that linebacking core. I mean, they're solid up front. They're gonna get to the quarterback and they're gonna defend the pass, but J.T. Thomas and Blake Costanzo, these are not guys who are gonna get it done in a 3-4. I mean a 4-3. I mean, you lose Urlacher. I mean, you're losing a leader, and you're losing somebody who's been productive. I'm already okay banged up, but ultimately they need bigger names at linebacker for sure.
Now, you don't think Jason Campbell's the answer for backup?
I don't. He's a brand name for a backup. When I say brand name for a backup, I mean everyone knows who Jason Campbell is. But I mean, I don't really see him, being that productive. Wasn't he the quarterback when they played the 49ers that they just got buried that game? Was that him? Am I thinking straight? Who's he? The Monday Night game of backup quarterbacks.
They had Caleb Haney, but he was traded to Denver, and Denver cut him.
So Jason Campbell's really not somebody that I'm looking at as a solid backup. I mean, he's got experience as a starter, but ultimately, I would say, if they could get a better backup, they should definitely try and do it.
Yeah, and it might not hurt them to get a quarterback in this draft in the second or third round.
They're going to look at this. How long are they going to have Cutler there? He's somebody who's definitely taken his lumps and had his concussions. They may want to start looking at a quarterback of the future.
Okay, next team up. This is the interesting one. The Minnesota Vikings. Go ahead. I'll let you start on this one.
No, I was going to say although they signed Greg Jennings, I mean, he's not Percy Harvin. And, on the Blitz, the beginning of one of our first episodes of the Blitz, we were talking, I said, Percy Harvin's going to be one of those mental case wide receivers who eventually is going to get himself benched and then traded. Now, it happened in the offseason, but I knew he was just a loose cannon. The good news is he's off the team. The team doesn't seem to be happy about it, and teams don't really respond well to that for some reason. When he was one of those popular players, it has a ripple effect throughout the locker room. Bringing Greg Jennings, well, from championship pedigree and production, I think that's going to help. But, I mean, you're losing a real diverse part of your offense with losing Percy Harvin. You can't find a lot of Percy Harvins that can run the ball, return kicks for over 100 yards, catch 70-yard touchdown passes. It's a humongous loss that I don't think they're going to be able to replace. On that being said, on offense,
that Chris, the thing that I'm looking at with Jennings is that Ponder is going to be working with a guy who has already contacted him, and they've already gotten together, and he's helping Ponder. Harvin never liked Ponder from the beginning, and he's been public about it.
Yeah, and I think it's going to, you know, you lose a player like that, you know, you can't make up the production. You really have to figure out how you're going to account for that. Because ultimately, he played hard, and he was productive on the field, and it's going to be a loss. Now, it may help the development of Christian Ponder, just like, you know, when the Giants got rid of Tiki Barber, you know, you saw the development of Eli Manning. You get rid of the guy who doesn't like him off the team, you let the quarterback become the leader of that locker room, you know, that also has a ripple effect throughout the locker room also. Now your quarterback's your leader. He's taking control of the team. It's hard to do that when you have a Percy Harvin chirping in the background, you know, undercutting the things you're trying to do, not doing everything he can to make you successful. And I guess Minnesota looked at that and said, you know what, let's bring a veteran like Jennings. Although we're not going to get the diversity that we have from Percy Harvin, we're going to get a leader. We're going to get somebody who can work, you know, get some cohesion with Ponder. We'll bring in a backup quarterback with experience who also comes from a winning organization in Matt Cassel. You know, and they're really doing everything they can to get Christian Ponder to see if he is going to be their quarterback of the future. Because I don't think
right.
If it's not this year, it's never. And if it's not this year,
I mean,
he's won games, but this isn't a league where you need somebody to manage. You don't want quarterbacks managing games in the NFL the way it is today. You need quarterbacks to be able to throw the ball and win games for you. So on offense, I think they're building a nice little offense there. I'd like to see him get another receiver. I don't think, you know, Jerome Simpson and having Greg Jennings is a real big thing. But when you run with Adrian Peterson, you know, you don't really need, you know, it's not as big a need as you may think. But eventually, if they can get some deep threats, they may be able to open up even bigger running lanes for Adrian Peterson, as scary as that sounds. But the problem they're going to have this year is going to be on defense. So that's where they need to upgrade. Middle linebacker is where it jumps out at me. Audie Cole is really their only middle linebacker on the roster. And I'm not looking at that as something that they can go into the season with. They cut Antoine Winfield, who's one of my all-time favorite defensive backs. And, again, you're losing a leader. You're losing a guy who can hit hard and stop the run from the cornerback position, which is, you know, aren't many of those left. So, you know, you're going to look at a guy like Josh Robinson and Chris Cook as your corners. I really don't – again, they're not really going to scare anybody. They're not going to be able to shut down Calvin Johnson, who they're going to have to play twice. They're not going to be able to shut down the Packers offense, who they're going to have to play twice. And Brandon Marshall. So they have some big-name receivers that they're going to have to shut down. I don't see that secondary being able to do it, and that's where they need to get an upgrade.
Right. And I don't see where the other thing that I have an issue with Minnesota is the fact that they're going to have to definitely look at wide receiver hard, because Juris Wright and Chris Summers as wide receiver twos and three is not going to work.
No.
Now, Jerome Simpson and Greg Jennings kind of play the same position. So now we have that was the downside to picking up Greg Jennings, because it now put those two guys one right behind the other in depth.
Exactly. And I think Jennings was more of, let's get an experienced guy here, proven winner from a tip-top organization, and have him lead this, you know, pretty young offense and young quarterback. So if he's able to do that, help the development of Ponder, you know, mission accomplished. But as far as production on the field, you know, they need to start looking at getting some weapons around Christian Ponder, because he's not going to be able to do it with just a Greg Jennings.
Right. Right. I totally agree. Okay, next up is the Detroit Lions. They answered the need for a running back with Reggie Bush. It seems like all their running backs have an issue every time they draft one. The tight end position has been lackluster. I mean, I understand who they have at tight end over there, but with Pettigrew. But for some reason, I just think that they need to go. They need to find a tight end that can push him, I think, more than anything, and may the best one start. Obviously, they need to go out to wide receiver, and the tackling guard on the offensive line needs to be seriously addressed, and because we're gonna see him hurt again like he was in his first 2 years of coming into the league, and they need to look at that safety position. What do you see?
Well, the number one need for the Detroit Lions is maturity. In all honesty, it's maturity.
That's a fact. That is a fact.
Because they, if you look at their roster, position by position, they have Super Bowl caliber players. Now, based on, you know, what they do on the field. I mean, but, you know, the mistakes that this team, that they make, I mean, not to the point of, like, the Chargers, where I say they have a self-destruct button. This team just is just so undisciplined and so poorly coached. You know, 15-yard penalty after 15-yard penalty on dumb mistakes. This is, you know, they need somebody to be a leader on this team, on defense. Ndamukong Suh, although productive, and you see him in all the commercials, he's not a leader. You lead by example, you know. And I look at this team, and I say, we need a leader, you know. So, you know, that being said, I mean, you know, looking at positions, I think they're okay at wide receiver. I think if Brody Coyles comes back, or Ryan Broyles, I'm sorry, he comes back from his knee injury, they found themselves their number two. But ultimately, I really think they need help on the outside, left linebacker. I mean, Ashley Palmer is not the answer. I mean, their left defensive end, Willie Young, I mean, you know, the left side is really not anything that's going to, you know, that's where I would run the ball if I'm Adrian Peterson. They're good in the middle with Tulloch. They're good in the middle with Farley and Ndamukong Suh, but they just need maturity. Stop making the macho plays to get the late hits to get the 15-yard penalty. And I think this team is right in the mix next year as a potential playoff contender, because there aren't a lot of needs at position. The needs is they need to grow up as a team.
On top of that, in order for you to have leadership that is disciplined, you need to have a head coach that's also disciplined, and he seems to be as undisciplined as the players are.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They definitely need better coaching. I mean, you guys are buffoon. I mean, you know, he needs to take control of that. You know, when these guys do it, pull him out of the game. You know, stop making excuses for him. Ndamukong Suh gets thrown out of a game, and it's like no big deal. You know, you got guys getting ridiculous 15-yard penalties on when their defense shuts down the opportunity to get their offense the ball back, but they make a stupid bonehead play, bench the guy. All right, you're done for the game. You know, take a stand. A lot of other successful coaches have no problem doing that. Bench somebody in the next game for the first series. I mean, Wes Welker, I think, was benched for the start of a game for missing a meeting or something. You know, if you could do that to a Wes Welker, you can do it to a Chris Houston or you know, someone like DeAndre Levy when they get a bonehead 15-yard, you know, personal foul penalty that's totally unnecessary. So, I mean, I really think they need to really mature as a team, because I think they have Super Bowl talent on that team.
And you're right, that is the main concern with them. That is the absolute main concern. How do you view this division, the NFC North, 1, 2, 3, 4?
Well, I think the Packers are the cream of the crop. I think they're going to, you know, they're still, as long as you have Aaron Rodgers, you have a chance to win a Super Bowl. Behind them, I think it's Detroit. I think this is the year they kind of put it together. I think the Bears or the Vikings are going to regress a little bit. I don't see them as a playoff team. I think everything aligned perfectly for them last year. But I don't really see Ponder making the turn and becoming a quarterback who can lead an offense to the playoffs. So I look at them as coming in third, and I look at Bears in last place. So I see Green Bay, Detroit, Vikings, and then the Bears.
Wait a minute. Okay. Got it. I got it. Okay. Because
yep.
I'm keeping track of our information here.
Okay.
Cool. Next up is the NFC South. First team in the hole is the Atlanta Falcons. I'm going to let you start this one because this team here, I think they make it to the Super Bowl based on what they've done in the off season so far.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, I think they upgraded at and that's where their biggest need comes in. This is a Super Bowl team, okay, which means they need to bring in an experienced, proven backup quarterback, okay? Guys, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick, I think, would be a perfect fit, a perfect fit as a backup quarterback. Because if Matt Ryan goes down, you still have enough talent to get to the Super Bowl, okay? And I'm not taking anything away from Matt Ryan. I'm just saying, if he goes down, okay, you need somebody with proven NFL starting experience who can go in and can actually start and win games and win playoff games. So that's something that they absolutely need. And on defense, you know, they brought in Dante Robinson. They brought in some players to upgrade. They lost Asante Samuel. So I really think that they're going to have an opportunity to go to the Super Bowl. Green and Steven Jackson give them some definite upgrades. They don't have a lot of holes. And I really think the biggest need is a backup quarterback.
I agree. They just re-signed Tony Gonzalez to a 2-year deal. There's not much, you know. Now, obviously, I would probably look at drafting a quarterback or tight end for the future too. But they could actually come up with Ryan Fitzpatrick and pop one out of the draft for the probably the future. But if you bring in Fitzpatrick, you can wait another year, and which is projected to be a better quarterback draft anyhow. So that puts them in a nice situation to have. I'm kind of stunned that Fitzpatrick hasn't been sought after yet. You know, there's still a couple of teams that I think he would be a starting quarterback over what they have. But
who's
regardless
that?
Of that, well, right now,
Fitzpatrick?
Say again?
What quarterback were you talking about?
Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of teams he could start for, but I think if Atlanta is smart, I mean, he would be the perfect scenario. Indoor team, tons of talent around him, which he didn't have in Buffalo, a good running game, which he did have in Buffalo, but, I mean, balance is really what they have, good tight end, good defense. I think if needed, and you have to go to a backup quarterback, you don't want to leave it to an unproven quarterback with the talent and the investment they have in that team.
I agree. I totally agree. Okay, the next team up, the Carolina Panthers. What do you see in this team, Chris?
Well, I really, really, really like Cam Newton. I think he's definitely a top-tier quarterback, but he needs some help. He needs some help. And he needs an offensive coordinator who's going to help institute the running game. You know, I mean, they just don't run the ball enough other than when he's running it. And maybe that could be because nobody, he doesn't have any good wide receivers after Steve Smith. And that's a huge need, is wide receiver. That's their number one need, is a number two wide receiver. I also look at, but as far as offense, that's the only need that I see is getting some depth and some production out of somebody other than Steve Smith. I mean, Brandon LaFell's, he'd have a good game and disappear for three games. Have a good game, disappear for three games. Amani Edwards never turned out to be anything, and David Geddes can't seem to stay healthy and be on the field. They have three solid running backs in Tolbert, Stewart, and Liedlo Williams. Solid offensive line with a lot of first-round picks in it. They're set on offense if they can get a wide receiver. defense is where you really have to look at why this team was as bad as they were last year. Charles Johnson, Greg Hardy, I mean, they can get after the quarterback asking their backup, Frank Alexander. But their defensive tackles are atrocious. They get no push. They don't stop. They can't stop the run. And that's why Luke Kuechly had so many tackles. You can see the guys are just balling right through their defensive line. But the thing
Correct.
Is, you know, he wasn't getting these tackles, you know, 1 yard gains. They were 7 yard gains, okay? And that's also why Luke Kuechly didn't have a lot of impact plays. You know, when we talked about that a few broadcasts ago, he had tackles, but they weren't impactful tackles. So they need their defensive tackles to really step up and start getting some push on the pocket and try and clog the run. And also quarterbacks. I mean, they've been also awful. I mean, Josh Thomas and Josh Norman, and I mean, these are guys who aren't, they're not going to stop the Saints. They're not going to stop Atlanta. There's four games right there that could potentially lose just on their cornerbacks. And the fact that, you know, if Charles Johnson isn't getting pressure on the quarterback, they're going to be getting thrown all over. And their safeties, Charles Godfrey is okay, but the free safety, Haruki Nukamura, I mean, these aren't guys who are NFL starters. You know, they really need, it's a good draft for defensive backs, especially the safety position. And that's really an area they need to look at, is they really need to concentrate getting a number two wide receiver and the defensive side of the ball.
I agree. I think they need defensive line help badly, and that free safety is atrocious. And that's the nicest thing I can say about it at this point.
Yeah, exactly.
And then pick up a wide receiver too. That and just keep getting wide receivers until you find one, because at this point it's not working.
I
totally agree. Tampa Bay Buccaneers. How do you view what they've done in the offseason so far?
Well, they could use some O-line help. I mean, Carl Nix, you know, Davin Joseph and guard aren't exactly game changers. Honestly, I mean, I don't know what they have as a quarterback. I'm not saying it's a need, but it's something to keep an eye on, for sure. Things I would look at, but though, there's a lot more pressing needs in quarterback. Offensive line, I think they could use some upgrades there. Definitely look at, you know, in internal, right guard, center, left guard. I think they definitely need a tight end. If they're not going to re-sign Dallas Clark, Luke Stocker, Nate Bynum are not what I'm going to considering tight end options. Again, if you have a quarterback who's young, you want to surround him with talent. You know, tight ends are big. I mean, so, you know, these are good safety valves for young quarterbacks. If you look at Kyle Rudolph, how big of a safety valve he was for Christian Ponder. And then Dallas Clark, for that matter, last year for Josh Freeman. So I'd like to see them get a tight end. Probably, you know, either in a draft or if there's one available as a free agent. And then from there, you got to look on the on the defensive side of the ball. Their linebackers aren't very good. You know, Mason Foster and Jonathan Casillas, I mean, you know, they're not very good. They don't have depth. Levante David is really their only good linebacker. So they could definitely use an impact player on the at the linebacker position. They did sign Golston to help their defensive back, to, you know, good free safety to go. That's a good tandem. Mark Barron and Dachshund Golston is a good tandem. Problem is their corners are a little weak. So on defense, I mean, they're okay up front. Gerald McCoy seems to be coming around. Adrian Claiborne and DeJuan Bowers are productive. They could use some help in the middle, but then they could use some help outside with the corners. So most of their needs are on the defensive side of the ball.
I agree. The offensive side of the ball, you're absolutely right. They need this. I think there's up to four possible NFL ready tight ends that is in this draft. And if they end up with one, I think they're gonna be surprisingly happy if they nab one of those guys for years to come. And for the most part, it's a young team, so it should gel well together.
And they're well coached. Seattle's an excellent coach. I like what he brings to the table. A little bit of toughness, a little bit of an edge, a little bit of an attitude. He's not looking to be politically correct, you know, and I like that. You know, at the end of the game, he's not taking a kneel down as something for granted. He's looking to make a cause a fumble. And it may have pissed off other coaches who don't like it. But, you know, I kind of like that. You know what? Hey, I'm playing the game. You know, I like that. I mean, you know, that's the one thing that really bothers me with the NFL, and it costs a lot of teams. And it costs a lot of coaches their jobs, is worrying about running up the score or not trying to make the opponent look bad and taking the foot off the gas when you're up. You know, Steelers are notorious for that. Just keep going. Keep pounding the ball. Keep trying to score. You know, let them try and stop you. If you put up 50 points, you put up 50 points. Boo on them for not stopping you. But too many times, teams just give up too early in a game. And in the way the NFL is now, you can score 21 points in 3 minutes. You know, it doesn't matter who you are. You know, one fumble and one fluke play here or there, you can put up 21 points in minutes and beat your opponent that's just tried not to embarrass you. You know, so NFL teams need to just start, take their foot off, keep their foot on the gas for all 60 minutes, not for 47 minutes.
Okay. And finally, in the NFC South, we have the New Orleans Saints.
Okay. Well, if you look on offense, I'd say they're pretty good. You know, all the way around. They need a backup quarterback. Again, if Breeze happens to come in, they have a good offensive line. They have good wide receivers. They have, I think one of the best tight ends in the league. I like this Joseph Morgan wide receiver as a replacement for the unproductive Devery Henderson. I like Lance Moore as your Wes Welker type of wide receiver who, you know, gets the 5 or 10 yard play, the big third down catch. You know, Colston for big plays. Joseph Morgan and Chris Givens for big plays. Now, they're set on offense. The one thing I like them to do on offense is settle on a running back and just go with them. You know, a lot of these running backs that they have seem to do better when they're given the ball. I mean, Pierre Thomas is a tough runner. Mark Ingram is a tough runner. Chris Ivory is a tough runner. And you have Darren Sproles, who's that change of pace. Pick one of those three running backs between Thomas, Ivory, and Ingram, and make them your running back. And that's it. I mean, too many times, they just can't seem to get the production they need out of the running game because of that. But on offense, I mean, if that's their biggest complaint, they're in good shape on offense. Now, they're not on defense for numerous reasons. Again, they're changing from the 4-3 to the 3-4. They don't have the players for that. If there was ever a team that doesn't have the players to do it, it's the New Orleans Saints. You're going to take Will Smith and put him as an outside left outside linebacker from a defensive end position. He's too big and he's too slow. Just like it didn't work for Mario Williams, it's not going to work for Will Smith, which means you're not going to get the pressure on the quarterback you need to get for the 3-4 to be successful. So they need 3-4 talent. They need outside linebackers who can rush. Bilma is a tackler, not a pass rusher. They're putting him to the outside. I just don't agree with that. They did sign Keenan Lewis as a right corner. He's familiar with the 3-4. So they have some depth now as the defensive backs, but they're not very good. Jabari Greer, Roman Harper, you know, Patrick Robertson, these aren't playmakers. Keenan Lewis last year had no interceptions. You know, they just signed him to a big contract. They need to go out and get people who fit the 3-4 scheme. I thought James Harrison would be a perfect fit there. You put him outside. Maybe take Jonathan Vilma. Trade him to somebody who needs an inside linebacker. Okay? I mean, these are things that or a 4-3 outside linebacker. Make some moves to fit the scheme. They don't have a single player on that roster who fits the scheme that they're running. I don't get it. And that's going to hurt them.
I totally agree with you on that. On the defensive side of the board, it's almost like somebody is afraid or really don't know what they have in the people that they have.
Yeah.
That's not a good thing.
I don't think they looked at their team and said, you know, we have better talent for the 3-4. I just think they said, we're bringing in a coach. He does the 3-4. Oh, great. Now we're converting to the 3-4. Now, they could do this in the draft. Maybe they'll make some signings. But I would look at it as, and this is where I really think Dallas made a mistake also. Start looking at your guys who are, you have 3-4 guys, 3-4 players. Look for teams that are converting to 3-4 and start making trades because they have a 4-3. They have 4-3 players. I know NFL, they don't make a lot of trades, but, you know, wouldn't have been a terrible move to try and, you know, trade a Will Smith, you know, to a team that's running the 4-3 to get an outside linebacker who's been in the 3-4. I mean, I don't know the intricate details of why teams don't trade, but, you know, it's a head-scratcher for a team that could go to the Super Bowl with their offense is going to get killed with their defense next year.
I agree. So in the NFC South, 1, 2, 3, 4, how do you see this team or see this division?
Well, I think it's going to be Atlanta. And then number two, I'm going to go with Carolina. I think they're going to make the moves that they need to make to fill the holes that they have. Carolina. Then the Saints third, because they just can't get over how poorly their defense is going to play next year. And in Tampa, they'll be competitive, but they'll be also in last place.
At the first division that we actually have a difference of opinion.
Mm-hmm.
We've been exact dead on 1, 2, 3, 4 so far. Atlanta, Tampa Bay, Carolina, and New Orleans. I think New Orleans defense if they want to go to the 3-4, and they realize and they haven't figured out that they don't have the right personnel, then that means that their defensive players that they draft are not going to be the right personnel. Because they're going to be in a situation where they're going to have players who are traditional starters who are going to complain that they're not starting if they bring the right people in.
I think you're going to see some maneuvers at draft time. I really think a lot of these teams are going to trade some of their big names around draft time. You know, you're going to see some marquee play. I really think this draft, you know, day one, day two, you're really going to see some marquee players traded. I really feel that's what's going to happen this year.
Right.
How do you keep a Will Smith as an outside linebacker when there's teams starving for an edge pass rusher? You know, he's a goal. He'd bring gold in as a trade. You know, that's a no-brainer.
Hey, that brings us to the NFC West.
Mm-hmm.
The NFC West, we're looking at the San Francisco 49ers. I've been waiting for this one to hear what you have to say.
Which team you want me to start with?
The San Francisco 49ers.
Well, I'll tell you. They have needs. Believe it or not, they have needs, but they're not major needs. They need a backup. They also need a veteran backup quarterback because this is a Super Bowl team. Kirkpatrick, now, although exciting and excellent last year and led the team to the Super Bowl, still only has 10 games under his belt. And I always look at these players and I think Cordell Stewart. Okay? The league figures out new types of players. Okay? And if the league figures out RG3, Kirkpatrick, you know, you need to have that backup quarterback like a Fitzpatrick to help you. When you have that running quarterback, you have the potential to have an injury. And if the talent that you have on that team, you got to have a backup quarterback proven. That'd be the biggest mistake a team could make is not spending money there. The other places you got to replace is on actually on the defensive side of the ball is replacing Golston. I mean, that's not an easy replacement. The guy was a hard hitter. He set the tone on defense, you know, and teams are going to have to make up for that somehow. So I could see there's a deep draft for safeties. I could see them going after a safety in the draft, but definitely look at safety as a possibility. And I would like to see him add another receiver. I don't know if A.J. Jenkins is going to step up and be a good receiver. He was drafted last year. They did bring in Bolden to replace Moss. Crabtree's really – they need a deep threat. I don't see one on that roster. So I would like to see them potentially go after a wide receiver who could stretch the field.
Okay. The Seattle Seahawks.
With the Seattle Seahawks, they don't need much. If there's one team that doesn't have a need, it's them. They filled it by getting a Percy Harvin. So they're in good shape with Percy Harvin. Now you have him, and you have, you know, Golden Tate. You have some solid, you know, Sidney Rice. You have backup. You have, you know, your two deep at running back. decent tight end, good offensive line, two quarterbacks, defensive side of the ball, probably the best secondary in the league, good defensive linemen, and good linebackers. I don't see a need. I really would have to reach, and I'd be picky, and probably just making it up if I have to say that team has a need. Now, that doesn't translate to wins, but they have a good coach. They got a little case to the playoffs. Again, if the quarterback doesn't regress in year two, a la Cordell Stewart, that's a team that's going to be one division that's going to be it's going to be fun to watch. So the days of an 8-8, 7-9 team making the playoffs are over in that division.
Yeah, and the other thing too is it's amazing that 3 years ago this was this division along with the AFC West were the two laughing stocks in the NFL, and my gosh, has the tide changed? The one area that I'm gonna go off on a limb and say, okay, I think it would not hurt to have they can just draft the best available person available for the offensive line. Period.
Well,
and
right.
Then,
I mean. That's
and then
I'm
they're
look
looking
at
yeah, and then also at defensive end, I think I have a slight concern there. But the one area that I think they really, I think still is, even with the addition of Percy Harvin, I think that it would not hurt them to draft another wide receiver and another tight end. And this is a good draft to get a quality wide receiver in because there's an abundance and at the tight end position. And the reason why I'm saying that is because Harvin, Sidney Rice, and Zach Miller all have tendencies of being hurt. So
yeah.
by getting those up and comer guys is going to mm-hmm. put a lot of heat on these guys to get NFL play ready a lot sooner. Because if this guy comes in and he's very productive, then they may find themselves sitting on the outside or something.
Well, right, exactly. So Seattle's in really good shape, and I don't think they mortgaged their future. It really was a light draft for probably what they needed, which was a wide receiver, and that was a smart trade. Those are the type of trades I could see happening draft day, where you could see, I always call it a Jerome Bettis type trade, where you can steal a superstar who's out of favors in their organization on draft day. So I could see a lot of that happening at the draft, and they were smart. That was a good move. They weren't going to get the talent they were going to get at their pick that they got with Percy Harvin. I think it was just a great move, and there's going to be a battle for that division.
I agree. And I think the winner of that division is eventually could be in the Super Bowl as well.
Well, I'll tell you, just, you know, doing all these, team needs, boy, is the NFC packed. It was a real change of fate. It used to be the AFC was stacked. The NFC has some home run hitters with Atlanta and New Orleans or San Francisco and Seattle and potentially one of the NFC East teams. I mean, you really have some real good talent in this division, in this conference now.
I agree. Okay, next team up, the St. Louis Rams. I'm going to go with the same two I said last year, offensive line, mainly tackle, and wide receiver. It seems like they always end up with the wide receiver that's the least productive when translating it to the NFL.
Well, right. I mean, in Sam Bradford's defense, they really didn't do a good job surrounding him with weapons.
No, they're not.
You know, they never – I mean, it's so crucial to have a good tight end when you have a young quarterback. I mean, if you look at over the years, some of the tight ends that some of the young great quarterbacks had, you know, look at Aikman had his Novacek and Favre had his Kimura, and he had the ex-Philadelphia Keith Jackson and – you know, I mean, these players need that tight end, and they don't surround them with that. They didn't get them any wide receiver help ever. His offensive line always seems to fall apart. I think Jeff Fisher is going to turn this team around, but there was opportunity for them to get depth or get an impact wide receiver, and it didn't. Okay? I mean, they could have got Mike Wallace. I mean, I don't know if their cap situation was. They could have got Mike Wallace. They could have went after Greg Jennings. You know, maybe they make a trade to get a wide receiver. They didn't do anything to help, and they need to establish that in the draft this year. They need to get a wide receiver, get a tight end in the draft. They need to get a power runner to replace Steven Jackson, because the two they have are speed backs with Pede and Richardson. They're not power runners. And on the defensive, I mean, so their needs are offensive. And you wouldn't think that when you have a first-round quarterback, the number one pick overall, you know, you'd think he'd be pretty set at that, you know, on offense because you would surround him with weapons. They haven't done it. I wasn't even going to do it. And on defense, I mean, they need out any linebackers. I mean, especially on the left side. I mean, Sammy Brown, I mean, that's not an option for linebacker. I mean, they're pretty good in the secondary with Finnegan. I really think that defense, they're okay, which is, you know, but offense, I mean, this is a team that could get shut out a lot this year if they don't start getting some playmakers on that team.
I like what you have to say about that. And then finally, we have the Arizona Cardinals. I'm going to say that they need first of all, right now, quarterback, regardless of whatever else goes down, quarterback. Other positions that I'm looking at is the offensive guard and tackle. I know Mendenhall is there, but I'm going to say they need a running back, and they need an impactful tight end to go along with that quarterback. What do you see?
Well, this is I think the Cardinals are setting up to be the worst team in the league. They're setting up a first round draft pick, the number one pick overall, if they don't start making some moves. And this is where I say a guy could be drafted at, you know, or traded at draft day, Larry Fitzgerald. I mean, get this guy off this team. I mean, he's not going to help them. As great as he is, get him on a contender. You know, that's the way I look at it. They need a quarterback. They spent the money on Cobb. They cut him. I really think they could have kept him. I really don't think he really never got a fair shot. He never had an offensive line to work with. He never had a running game to work with. You know, I really don't think he had a good opportunity to show what he can do. And when he did last year, he played well until he got hurt. I mean, that's also been a problem, bugaboo for him. So he's gone. They need a quarterback. But I don't care who the quarterback is. They don't shore up that offensive line at just about every position. Doesn't matter who's the quarterback if they're not going to be productive. Exactly like you said, a tight end to stretch the field. They're good at wide receiver. I mean, they got Andre Roberts, Fitzgerald, and they have Michael Floyd. So they're good at wide receiver, but they have nobody to throw the ball to them, you know. And they're okay at running back. Borderline okay with Ryan Williams and Mendenhall. Now on defense, well, they need offense. They need outside linebackers who can put pressure on the quarterback. They're going to run a 3-4. And then there are two, you know, Alexander and Schofield, I think when I was looking it up, combined 6.5 sacks last year. That's not going to do it for a 3-4 defense with four outside linebackers, or with your two outside linebackers. You need 10-10, not, you know, 4-2.5.
I agree.
And their defensive back, they cut Adrian Wilson. They replaced with Jeremiah Bell. I don't know if that really was the move I would make, Adrian Wilson being a leader on that team. But this is a team that, you know, I mean, if I'm on the draft and I'm looking at, all right, I have my first round draft pick, and can I afford him? Would I be better with Larry Fitzgerald? I'd make the trade and just try and get him. And just say, you know, I'll give up my first and third, you know, pay the money and have, you know, one of the top five wide receivers on my team who will be motivated and probably help me get over the top and be a Super Bowl contender. He's that good. The team that jumps out at me that I think if they had the money could do it would be Pittsburgh, because he's got ties to the area. They need a wide receiver. They probably, you know, if they could restructure his contract after they made the trade, I really could see Pittsburgh making a move, you know, and getting Fitzgerald. Somebody's got to get this guy off the team. You know, I'm sure he's begging for it.
The other side of it is he's sitting in a situation where he is very good at taking the quarterback aside and working out with this guy until he gives up. So we're talking about a guy that won't hurt, you know, it's going to be a win-win situation regardless who the quarterback is, because this guy loves to work out, and he loves to get that continuity with his quarterback so that he can be NFL ready day one. So whoever ends up the quarterback there, they're going to be very pleased to know that they have a wide receiver that's going to help him get better. And that's a great thing.
Exactly. And that was what was the head-scratcher for me last year. I mean, they may have the worst quarterback play in the history of pro football last year with Skelton and Ryan Lindley. They played terrible. And I mean terrible, even with the offensive weapons they had. So I don't know if you know, coaching, and Bruce Arians can help the situation. He's very good at developing quarterbacks. There's rumors they're going to go for Geno Smith. I don't look at him as a first round top five quarterback pick, but I think a lot of teams are going to be riding the success of the quarterbacks from last year into this year's draft with the mediocre class of quarterbacks. But they need one bad, and if they're not going to get one, please trade Fitzgerald to a contender.
Okay, now based on the NFC West, the way it's shaping up, how do you rate them 1, 2, 3, 4 coming into the season?
I go 49ers, Seattle, Rams, Cardinals. I think the 49ers, with you know the fact that they've been there, coaching, I give the edge to coaching. I give the edge to the quarterback. I give the edge to the defense. I just think the 49ers are I think they're just a skosh better than Seattle. So I look at them to take the division. Seattle second as a wild card, and then the Rams and Cardinals are going to just struggle all year.
Okay. What we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and go to a commercial break, and Chris, stick around, and we'll come back to Sports Addict.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal, but something seems to be missing. Stickers from LibertyStickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's LibertyStickers.com. But wait, there's more. You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to LibertyStickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. LibertyStickers.com, the world's most dangerous stickers.
Hello everyone, Proof here again. I want to let you know about our brand new sponsor, Silver Leaf Tea. Now as you guys know that have listened to me for years, I am a tea aficionado. I have hundreds of different flavors and styles at my house, and Silver Leaf has exactly the kind of stuff that I look for. I love loose tea, great antioxidants, I just love the taste of it, and this Silver Leaf has black, they have green, they have white, they have organic. Great for hot tea and iced tea. Silver Leaf Tea, it's right on our website, freedomizerradio.com. And check it out and order it. Silver Leaf Tea. Hello again, Freedomist. Proof is here, and I want to talk to you about a brand new soda maker called SodaStream. Now, the Proof House has had SodaStream for about a year, and we love the thing. We use it quite often. With SodaStream, you can have fresh-made soda in seconds. One of the big things we like about it is that there's no high fructose corn syrup and no aspartame. There's over 60 flavors, or you can create your own. Not just sodas, they also have iced teas and energy drinks. Here at the Proof House, we make egg cream sodas all the time. Some other facts to consider here, there's no electricity, no more wasted bottles and cans, and the most important thing is that it tastes great. Keep in mind, too, this is a perfect family present for Christmas, or, hey, just surprise the family with something great. Also, for a limited time, there's free shipping, so go to FreedomizerRadio.com and look for the SodaStream link, and I hope you check out the product. That's SodaStream right on FreedomizerRadio.com.
Okay, welcome back to Sports Addict. This is Jerry, and with me today is Chris from The Blitz. Chris, you gave some pretty good thought processes on the placement of the teams and what you see and what they need to do. And every division we had spot on except for that one that I had to pipe in on. But for the most part, I thought it was for a bold prediction of Philadelphia winning the division. The reason why I kind of pointed that out was because of I actually had Philadelphia winning the division as well. I just didn't think anyone else would even look that far. To see that this team really is not as bad as it thinks it is.
Well, no. I mean, this is a team last year that was, I think they were 7 or 8 to 1 to win the Super Bowl. preseason. You know, I mean, this isn't a team that was, you know, mediocre and then went down. They played great at the end of last year. I thought they would ride that into the year before. I should say they played great. I think they won the last four games or whatever they did, or four or five. I thought they would parlay that into last year. I thought, you know, but they just couldn't overcome the injuries to their offensive line, which put Vic in a position to have to throw the ball away too much, made a lot of mistakes, forced the ball, trying to make plays while he was scrambling for his life. You know, so I really think this is a team that could really contend. And if they stay healthy, if, you know, they make the playoffs, that's going to be a team nobody's going to want to play. Because they can score at any point in time. And again, you know, DeSean Jackson can stay healthy and stay focused. You know, he's a triple threat too. He's good at, you know, end around. He's good at returns, and he's good at, you know, stretching the defense. I think the only a big weakness for them though is they have a lot of guys who can stretch the field. They need some guys who can catch those 5-yard passes also. And that's a problem.
That's
and they're
true.
Not a very good red zone team. So I Avant kind of fills that role, but I would like to them to see. I would like to see them. You know, if they got a possession receiver or a big target for, you know, like a Plaxico Burress-sized wide receiver, I think it'd be a lot better because, you know, it's hard for, you know, to use the weapons that DeSean Jackson and Macklin bring to the table when you're on the 10-yard line. They're not stretching the field at the 10-yard line. So that's a big problem for them. And I think when you have, a quarterback like Vic who's running and scrambling, they can't get open. And they're small receivers. They're not a good red zone team. So, but I think they have the players right now and the moves they made with a new coach to be a contender in the NFC for sure.
Yep, and this is another team that Fitzgerald will look sweet in.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, a position that they, you know, of one of the positions they don't really need. I tell you, a team that I think would be good for Fitzgerald that may be overkill, but they could probably afford them, is Green Bay. Just think about it. You know, Jordy Nelson, you know, has some injury problems. Randall Cobb, he's that Percy Harvin type receiver, but he's still kind of unproven. They lost their, you know, quote unquote number one wide receiver in Greg Jennings. James Jones was a good red zone receiver. But, you know, maybe thinking a little crazy here, but, I mean, Fitzgerald, I mean, I don't see any reason, you know, he would fit in perfectly on that offense, obviously, in any offense. But, you know, Green Bay's wide receiving core is good. It's not great. I mean, and they have a great quarterback. I mean, James Jones is not a great wide receiver. You know, Jordy Nelson can get deep. Randall Cobb's proven he could be a pretty big receiver. But, again, in a short amount, you know, only a year, basically, that'd be a nice landing spot for Fitzgerald if they were looking to trade him. But, you know, again, Packers may look at it, well, we have bigger needs than needing a wide receiver. We'll pass. So, and there aren't many teams that really need a lot of wide receivers. You know, maybe Carolina would be one that in the NFC that jumps out at me. Imagine him with Steve Smith. The Redskins would be one for sure. You know, without looking at the AFC, but just in the NFC, I mean, those are teams that could really use top talent like Larry. Every team could, but realistically, you know, those are some teams that could really use somebody like a Larry Fitzgerald.
I agree. I totally agree. Okay, next up we're going to talk about the coaching carousel, the NFL coaching carousel, and we're on the Eagles hiring Chip Kelly. Good move, bad move? What do you see?
I'm never a big fan of college coaches with no NFL experience as NFL head coaches. And I say NFL experience, NFL coaching experience. I like the coordinator or the head coach from NFL who goes to college and has great success, and then comes into the NFL and has great success, has good success, you know, like you're the coach from Seattle and, you know, other coaches. But the college coach, they have to basically rely on NFL coaches. I mean, the system he runs in college is not going to work in the NFL. So he's basically coming in and he has to learn not only how to do things in the NFL, but how to run an NFL-type offense, how to learn the NFL time management, how to deal with NFL players. So these are all the things that are negatives. On the positive, I mean, the guy's a good coach and he knows football. And the Eagles needed a change, and I think his success in college will gain the respect of the players on that team. But ultimately, I would have liked to have seen the Eagles go after somebody with a little bit more NFL background, because they really are in rebuild mode. They're in reload mode. And I think they needed an NFL-type coach to get them there. And I don't know if Chip Kelly's really going to be the answer. I think they're going to win the division, and that should be a part of my decision of whether I think it was a good move. But ultimately, I think they would have been better off going with an NFL-proven coach or someone with NFL experience to lead that team.
This is what I have on Chip Kelly, his previous background. He was a DB and a special teams coach at Columbia. He also was an outside linebacker and special teams and safety coach at Columbia in 91. In 90, he was DB and special teams. In 92, he was at New Hampshire as a running backs coach. In 93, he was at Johns Hopkins as a defensive coordinator. 94, 95, he was at University of New Hampshire as a running backs coach. 97, 98, he was the offensive line coach at New Hampshire. 99 to 2006, he was the offensive coordinator. And so he's pretty experienced of dealing with both sides of the ball, which is that's interesting in his own right. 2008, he was at Oregon as offensive coordinator, and then from 2009 to 2012, he was the head coach.
Yeah, and he's been a successful head coach, but again, you know, it's that transition from NFL to the NFL, and it's night and day from college. So he's a well-rounded college coach trying now to lead an NFL team in a very big market. It's not, you know,
correct.
Carolina. It's not Carolina, and it's definitely not Oregon. You know, it's not an Ivy League school. You're talking about Philadelphia, which they're not going to accept anything other than a contending team. And again, that's just something, you know, my preference is having a coach with some NFL experience. I think Schiano with Tampa, I believe he had coached on an NFL roster, on an NFL team before. So, I mean, I'm just using him as an example, but a lot of the coaches, I mean, NFL coaches that are hired are former coordinators or coaches of NFL teams. And that's why if you look at who's the Alabama coach? I can't think of his name off the top of my head. You know,
Nick Saban.
Nick Saban, you know, great college coach, didn't translate to the NFL.
But he was on the Cleveland Browns staff before. Just to let you know, he was a part of the head coach in New England, Belichick.
Yeah,
he was on his staff at Cleveland.
Was he like assistants, defensive back coach, or – he wasn't a coordinator, was he? Because that's the kind of the process. I mean, very rarely do they take a position coach and make him an NFL head coach. You know,
right.
Position coach is one thing. Coordinator, you know, maybe I should be a little more specific. You know, coordinator level coach in the NFL, because you're leading a larger group than, let's say, a defensive backs coach where you're coaching, you know, five or six people. You're not really, you know, into the play calling. You're not into decision-making that NFL coaches have to make. You know, I mean, I think that experience probably helped him with college, but it didn't translate to him being a good NFL coach.
Right.
I mean, I'd like to see it. I'd like to see that change. I mean, I think that would open up a lot more doors for people, but, you know, it's a part of the reason why you don't really see a lot of college coaches going to the NFL. In Harbaugh, I don't think he was a coach either. So he's kind of the opposite. I mean, he's done it, but he's had significant NFL playing experience, you know, under some significant coaches with, you know, Ted Marchbroda and Mike Ditka. But I just would like to see a guy have some NFL coordinator coaching experience as my head coach.
Right. And every now and then, like once every decade, there might be one that does pan out.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
that's,
I was gonna say, yeah. Exactly. Someone's going to slip through the net. I mean, it's always going to happen, and there's going to be an exception to the rule. Maybe this is the one. I mean, the NFL is changing. And again, if you can figure out, if you can get your team to score points, you have a chance to win. It's no longer run the ball and play good defense. And he's got a good offense, and that's his, where his area of expertise is. And I think you can mix in some of the things they did in Oregon into the offense when you have a quarterback like Mike Vick. So it's just an interesting, intriguing thing to watch for the 2013 season.
I agree. I totally agree. It's a, and for the most part, it's not gonna, it's not a bad thing. It's actually something that I think is gonna. Right now, NFL teams don't know what to look for.
And that's the thing too. Is you know, if you're a coach, you know, and Jerry Jones made a good point in an interview I saw a while back that no Super Bowl winning coach has gone to another team and won a Super Bowl. Okay, so, you know, when everyone would say, oh, what about, you know, hiring this coach out of retirement or that one, and that's just the comment he made that I kind of stuck, and it's true. So do you take a chance at hiring a Gruden who won a Super Bowl with another team, but, you know, over the last 46 years or 47 years, no other coach, head coach, won a Super Bowl with one team and then came back and won it with another? Although Parcells have gone to a Super Bowl with another team, Holmgren has gone to a Super Bowl with another team. You know, none of them have gone back and won the Super Bowl. You just take the shot at the unknown factor and try.
But a lot of that with the head coach, though, is you don't have the, first of all, you don't have the same players that you have when you went to the Super Bowl. That's number one. And Vermeil is a good example where he went to the Super Bowl and lost and then came back and won.
And won.
So his is the exact opposite. But, but just to make it to the Super Bowl and lose, as bad as you don't want to lose, that's a great feat. I mean, the Buffalo Bills, everybody says, yeah, but they're four-time losers and stuff like that, but they're the only team to ever go there four straight years in a row. And that's them a hell of a lot more than the teams that beat them every year.
Well, right. I mean, it just happened to be that, you know, I think their best shot to win was the first year that they lost. They were a huge favorite. And then they just ran into, you know, that Dallas buzzsaw. But, yeah, I agree with that. I look at what the Buffalo Bills accomplished as amazing, something we may never see again.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, it may be difficult to see back to – I don't know when we're going to see back-to-back Super Bowl champions again because of free agency and the parity in the league and the fact that teams go from last to first. I'm still a firm believer that the Kansas City Chiefs are going to the Super Bowl. And since we talked from last week, they've added more talent. They've added, you know, Dante Robinson, and they added Donnie Avery, and they added, you know, Fasano as a tight end, and they're still holding that number one pick. You know, so I mean, I think they're going, and they have what I think is a great coach. You know, I think he's going to be in the Super Bowl. I just feel it. I just think they got the talent to do it. They had 6 Pro Bowlers last year, and now they just added more talent and a good coach and a quarterback. There's no doubt that Kansas City is going to be unbelievable next year, and going from first pick in the draft to probably last pick in the draft. But, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you're not going to see what the Buffalo Bills accomplished. You're not going to see you know, what the 49ers and the Cowboys did in the 90s, where it was every year it was going to be one of those two teams.
Or the Giants.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, what way it was in the 90s. You know, now it's if you don't have a franchise quarterback, it doesn't matter what the rest of your team has. You're not going to win a Super Bowl without a franchise quarterback. And if you look at the quarterbacks who've won since 2000, it's, you know, man, it's a Manning. It's a Roethlisberger. It's a Brady. You know, I mean, right, you got one from Breeze and you got one from Rodgers, one from – but ultimately, I mean, look how many Super Bowls had Brady, Roethlisberger, or Manning in it in the last 10 years. So these are, you know, coaching big, and I'm a big believer in coaching, but right now it's all about franchise quarterbacks.
I agree. I totally agree. Tiger Woods wins the Doral Open Do you think Tiger Woods is on his way back now? He's right now he's sitting at number two overall in the world. Last year in January, I think he was like 15th or 20th or something like that, and he pulled off four victories last year.
Right.
And now we're looking at a guy who he was, even though he had a couple of bogeys at the doggone match, it looked like I have to say that I think he's back.
Yeah.
How about yourself?
I'm not a big golf follower, but I do watch sports, so I mean it's part of it. I think he's on his way back. I think he's on his way back of rebuilding his reputation. And it is one of those, one of the biggest falls from grace I've ever seen from an athlete. And I say that because when Tiger Woods was on top of his game, okay, I hope I can explain this right, I felt he was so far better than the number two person in that sport than I think I'm 42, have ever seen in any other sport, meaning the greatest player in that sport, the next best great player was closer in any other sport but golf. I felt he was that much better than the next best player, maybe in the history of any sport, and to be where he's at now where we have to discuss, is he back, is a humongous fall from grace. I mean, he was that much better. Maybe the next closest was maybe Michael Jordan, and then whoever you would call the next best player under him, the gap between the two. But it still was nothing like the gap between Tiger Woods and whoever number two was at the time. I think it's good for golf. I think it's good for sports. It's good for headlines. It's good for everybody to have somebody like Tiger Woods back, winning tournaments.
Yeah, but I don't think the fall from grace is the issue. What a lot of people don't realize is that doctors were telling him to take off time in his 12-year reign where he was where he went 12 consecutive years as number one in the world, which has never happened before ever.
Right.
In the history of the sport. And his caddy at the time made more money than the third place golfer in some cases. Okay.
Well, actually, it goes to my point where he was just that much better than the number two person, and it may have wore on him. I mean, we all,
right.
Age creeps up on all of us. And again, you're not that great without not only attending the tournaments, but how many rounds of golf is he doing in between tournaments to stay at the level he's playing at? And you're going to break down. I mean, you're going to break down. I mean, you see golfers, the greats cut down the amount of golf they play for that reason, to stay fresh for the big tournaments. Tiger was in them all. I mean, maybe it's time to, be a little bit more selective and hopefully be a little bit more competitive by doing so.
Right. And they were saying that his golf swing was so violent that that ultimately is the reason why his knee was separated in two different areas, and it was going to take a long time to heal. And on two occasions, he tried to come back sooner, and it made it worse. So he could have come back if he would have listened to the doctors and let it work itself, heal itself out over time. And he finally, after the second time of messing up his knee, that's when he decided to go ahead and listen to him this time. And now it's really paying off. And I have to take my hat off to Snedeker, because Snedeker is the one that actually helped him with his putting, and his putting was just phenomenal in the Doral Open. I mean, it was just phenomenal. He made some putts that reminded me of the old Tiger Woods, and he publicly came out and said if it wasn't for Snedeker, he doesn't know what would have happened. And then people are yelling at Snedeker saying, why did you help him out? You know he's one of your top opponents. He says, but we're best friends, and that's what best friends do. We help each other out. So,
all right.
That was one of those things. And you always want to defeat the guy at the top of his game. And if you look and see who came in second place at the Doral Open, I think Snedeker was either in second or he was in third, but he was somewhere nearby to trying to win that title. So it was a good run for everybody. But I take that back. Stricker came in second. I keep mixing him up with Snedeker. But Snedeker is the one that helped out Tiger Woods. Stricker is the one that came in second place. So
right.
I was very happy that Snedeker, you know, he took it, he looked at it a different way and actually shut the media up. So that was trying to make a big deal out of it.
Well, right. I mean, again, you know, athletes in any sport, and I do consider golfers athletes because, you know what, when I play a round of golf, which is rare, I'm tired at the end of that round of golf. So you have to be in pretty good shape. I mean, I'm not in the greatest shape, but I'm also not out of shape. You know, you're tired. So I consider golfers athletes. You know, I consider tennis players athletes. You know, you don't really, you know, you think you know your body better than anybody else is going to know your body. So I really think, you know, they're not like any other athlete. They're going to try not to, they're going to try and do everything they can to get back in the game. They're not going to listen to, they're not going to listen to their doctors as much as they should. And, you know, that's just human nature. That's just being competitive. Plus half of it is you don't want to believe that you're falling apart. So ultimately, I think, you know, I just think that, you know, it's going to be a learning experience from him. He's going to probably start taking advice from people to say, look, you may want to, you know, cut it down a little bit, minimize the exposure, and go after the big fish.
That's true. Now, the next up, we actually have a Manny Ramirez sighting. He just signed a contract to play in Taiwan. Mm-hmm. With no big league team seeking his services here. He, according to CBSSports.com, he is going to play for the EDA Rhinos in Taiwan.
Okay. He's a Hall of Famer, if you ask me, that just loves to play the game, I guess, and will continue to play as long as he can swing a bat. And that's something he could always do very well. Now, unfortunately, he was caught up in the steroid accusations with a lot of other players on that Boston roster, but, you know, the guy in his time was a dangerous, dangerous right-handed hitter, and he was probably one of the most clutch big-game hitters of our generation, and definitely would have an opportunity to have an argument with Cleveland Ray on it, I'm sure, but when it comes to a baseball topic, but ultimately, you know, the guy's playing baseball, I'm sure he's hoping it's going to lead to potentially a contract with a needing Major League Baseball team. I don't foresee it happening. I think the suspensions and everything else and his, you know, his Major League Baseball career is over, but that doesn't mean his baseball career has to be over. I mean, if you go back, if you think back to the days of Shoeless Joe Jackson when he was suspended from after the Black Sox scandal, the guy continually played in leagues all over the world because he just loved to play baseball. And you know what? Once it's in your blood, it's in your blood. You know, he's made enough
right.
money. You know, it's not a matter of money, I'm sure, at this point. It's just a matter of just playing. And, you know, maybe, you know, he wants to get to parlay potentially into a Major League invitation or signing. I just don't see it happening, though.
Right. And his contract is approximately $25,000 a month. So that's what he's getting while he plays in Taiwan.
Which, you know, a lot of us would jump up and down for. But, I mean, for him, it's a fall from what he's used to. But again, if he's playing for the love of the sport, where at this point in his career it's probably what it is, you know, then, I mean, I don't really see an issue with it. I think good for him. I don't think he'll be on a major league roster anytime soon or ever again, but you know, as long as he likes playing baseball, go for it.
I agree. Okay. Next up, we're going to talk about the Giants, NFL, Giants signing Cullen Jenkins. I think this was a great pickup for the Giants. They're in a situation where they needed a defensive lineman that could make some noise, and they got a 3-year deal out of him for $8 million, and the deal includes a $2 million signing bonus and $3 million guaranteed money. So I think this was a good move for both sides of the party. Jenkins joined the Giants less than 2 weeks after being cut by the rival Eagles. So I think that was a, you know, that for two games each year, that's going to give him the added incentive to make some noise against the team that cut him. So we'll see where that goes. What do you see?
Well, I think it's always a plus, strengthen yourself by weakening your opponent. So, it was, you know, they did cut him, so the Eagles did. But ultimately, you know, this is a proven player who's been productive on Super Bowl caliber teams and, you know, has a ring on his finger like a lot of the Giants player has, and they're a better team with him. It was definitely a need at the defensive tackle position. Their defensive line underproduced last year. I mean, off the Super Bowl, you thought this team was in, you know, Pierre Paul was going to go to that next level, and, you know, they get Sean Rogers, who's a, you know, big guy who could push the pocket. You know, it didn't really work out. I mean, Justin Tuck was in and out of the lineup, and, Umanyora didn't produce the way he should, and now you're getting, you know, he starts on the inside, and having Colin Jenkins is only going to make him better. I think it's a good signing.
So do I. Speaking of signings, which was NFL loaded, let's leave the NFL for a second, and let's talk Canada and Mexico in the World Baseball Classic this year. They ended up with a brawl,
right?
And surprisingly, nobody got suspended. What do you think of? Do you think that we're looking at that brawl as more than what it really was, or do you think there should have been some suspensions in that brawl?
I get it. I mean, it was – here's why I don't think there were suspensions. I mean, I think in the short period of time, I don't know if the interpretation of the rules are fully understood by the players. So I think they've kind of got a pass on that. I mean, I don't even think anyone was thrown out of the game, I don't think. But I'm okay with no suspensions. You know, it's a sport. It's competitive. You don't like to see that. But you know what? I mean, I just think the rule interpretations may not have been there. And that could have been the reason why, you know, they got a pass. I mean, it's never good to have that. And I'm sure every GM on every major league team who had a team in that brawl was on pins and needles and was like, oh, my God. But, you know, if there was a major injury, I mean, I think where everyone kind of just kind of took a step back, if somebody would have gotten hurt who's on a major league roster because of that brawl, you'd have seen the end of that baseball classic right then and there. Nobody would see the end of anybody with a name being in that baseball classic because, you know, you can't have a brawl and get David Wright or, you know, Justin Morneau or somebody else who's in that game hurt because of stupidity. And that's really all it was. It was just stupidity. But, you know, every now and then it's good to see a good baseball brawl.
Yeah, and I agree. I think it was, first of all, the issue was because of a bunt. I'm not saying that's a good thing or a bad thing, but you're absolutely right. The name of the game is if you're ahead, is to stay ahead. Not that Mexico would have come behind because at the time the score was 9-3, but
right.
on the other side of the fence is, you know, Mexico was already upset at themselves because they had a poor showing and they allowed the bunt to get the best of them. And that's the only way I can say it.
Well, I agree. And again, I think it's just if everyone knew the rules, they may not have continued to throw at players and the brawl could have been avoided. So I think it's fine. I'm okay with there not being suspensions. I mean, what is that really going to do other than hurt the game, the classic itself, because some of those players wouldn't be available for future games. So, you know, if you're trying to build steam with this thing every 4 years, you don't want to start kicking players out and not having the players available to play. You're just trying to sell tickets, ultimately.
I agree. Next up I'm going to talk about is the Catholic Seven leaving the Big East. But more importantly, the Catholic Seven are taking the Big East name with them. So on June 30th, the Catholic Seven will be departing the Big East, and it'll be a basketball-only conference. And the seven schools are DePaul, Georgetown, Marquette, Providence, Seton Hall, St. John's, and Villanova. And they will form a 10-team league by adding Butler, Xavier, and most likely Creighton to their lineup. They've also asked if Notre Dame would like to come over and be part of the league for 1 year before going into the ACC conference, which is where Notre Dame's everything except for football is going to be going next year or the year after. but it allows them the opportunity to be in a situation where, you know, they can go straight to the ACC if they wanted to, because they just got, they just paid out the Big East $2.5 million to leave early. So it's, I think what happened was the Catholic Seven took the rest of the Big East to court, and they won out in court to take the name, because the majority of the original members of the Big East were in the Catholic Seven. Most of those teams that are leaving actually started with the Big East. So by default, the football schools that's in the Big East, they are now forming a new conference, and right now I think they're going to call it the American Conference, which makes sense for them, because they're going all the way across the nation to try to find teams to join, because they keep getting depleted by other conferences taking their team. What do you see on this one?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think it was the right move to change the name. I mean, I'm not a big follower of Big East, but I know it's a storied conference with a storied history, with some great players coming out of it. And, you know, all things, good things come to an end, and that's really what's happened here. I mean, you know, when you get to court battles, I mean, nobody really wins in those situations. And, you know, I know to try and get Notre Dame in there for a year, I mean, that's just about getting revenue. But it's no longer the Big East, because, like you said, the teams are all over the country. And, you know, I'm curious to see how it plays out and how it affects, you know, future tournaments.
Okay, and breaking news, the Giants just signed linebacker Dan Connor, formerly of the Cowboys, to a one-year contract.
Okay, not a bad move.
Not a bad move at all.
Again, once again, you know, get better while you hurt your opponent.
That's correct. That is correct. Okay, next up, in this past last weekend, Matt Kenseth won the Las Vegas NASCAR race here in Las Vegas. What was interesting is that he actually won the race on his 41st birthday, which I thought was pretty, that was pretty cool for him to do. But he is a member, he joined Joe Gibbs Racing in the off season, and so far it looks like it's paying off, and that Matt Kenseth doesn't seem to be that hot-headed guy under the tutelage of Joe Gibbs' team. I think this was a great move by Joe Gibbs to bring him in, and hopefully they had a good conversation with one another to try to get him under wraps mentally, so that he can actually go ahead and compete well for this doggone race. I'm very happy for Matt Kenseth, and he's one of my favorite NASCAR drivers. So, you know, hats off to Matt Kenseth, and good going with his.
Well, right. I mean,
first,
again,
first victory of the year.
Yeah, you know, exactly. And that's, you know, NASCAR is you know, humongous. A lot of people, at least on, you know, on the East Coast where I live, it's not mainstream. But when I lived in Virginia, I lived in Newport News, Virginia, back in the late 90s. I mean, it was as big down there as football. So I mean, there's a lot of alignment with like the major sports, and now, I mean, you can change teams and you can sign on with other teams, and you know, it's kind of unique. And if you really look at it, it is similar to, you know, team sports, but you are out there as an individual. I mean, I know the big names. You know, I was a big Dale Earnhardt fan. But you know, ultimately, you know, it's a good move to go under a brand name like Joe Gibbs Racing. So anyone who can get under that title, you know, is going to have a shot, because they know they're going to have a commitment from ownership.
Correct, and that was a big piece. That was a real big piece right there. I totally agree with you.
Yep.
Hey, next up, the Steelers released James Harrison.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if I understand this move. Can you help me out with this one?
Oh, I can't even talk about the Steelers.
You knew it was coming.
Yeah, here's what I don't get. You cut James now. James Harrison, like, you know, I talked about last week. He was heading into this year, in this offseason, for the first time in forever, without needing a surgery, and actually kind of healthy. In his last six games, he was actually pretty productive. Now, I know he was aging and he couldn't come up with a contract, but they didn't have anyone to back him up. Jason Worlds is his backup. I don't see him stepping in and being able to be productive. Now, I'm all for, all right, we want to get younger. We want to get faster. We want to give someone else a try. Okay, so why are you bringing back Larry Foote? Why are you bringing back William Gay, who you didn't sign in free agency, sunk when he was here? You know, I mean, I just don't get the Steelers' maneuvers that they're making. They just lately have not been able to just let players go, you know, and just say, let's move on from this player. Let's bring in somebody younger and see what they do. I mean, you have a franchise quarterback. So you're going to be in contention. Give it a shot. Let these players go. Find someone else instead of Larry Foote. Find some, you know, if you want to let James Harrison go, okay. But could you at least try to trade him at least? Can you get a sixth-round pick for him? You know, I mean, could you try and, you know, do something along those lines? The Steelers this offseason had me scratching my head because they keep bringing back, they're bringing back players of an 8-8 team. I would have liked to see them move on. That's why when I heard Sanders was signed to an offer sheet, goodbye. I'll take the third-round pick. Maybe you can get somebody of that caliber or better with that third-round pick. So, ultimately, I wasn't a big fan of the James Harrison cutting. I actually would have rather seen him cut Woodley. But, you know, he's going to give somebody a boost. And if he can stay healthy, he can still be disruptive. And the rumor is he's going to talk with Baltimore. So, again, you know, I mean, they've had their troubles this offseason. But, you know, you get a guy like James Harrison, now you have somebody, an identity on defense that you lost when you had when Ray Lewis retired. And now that you're going to lose Ed Reed, you want somebody like James Harrison on your defense. Steelers,
I agree.
They have me scratching my head this offseason.
Well, and it's not just with James Harrison, but they were going to cut at one time Dwyer or Redmond, and then they let Mendenhall go, and then and now they want to hang on to Dwyer or Redmond.
They're both the same type of running back. They're not explosive, and they're good for a couple of games. They're not going to lead. They're not going to start 16 games. You know, you have two identical running backs. Why do you need them both? You know, I mean, they really, especially since there's some running backs out there that give a little bit more diversity than those two. You mean to tell me you couldn't assign a Jackie Battle or Mike Goodson, who the Jets just signed, to give you a little bit more flexibility at running back? These guys are just, you know, 3 yards a pop running backs. You know, I would have rather seen them sign a Justin Forsett. You know, lower level, they're not going to break the bank. You know, and they could give your offense a diversity that Redmond and Dwyer can't do. Heck, I would rather see them get rid of both of them and keep Mendenhall. At least he has a little bit of a dimension that he can give you. You know, I mean,
But check this out. The other side is Chris Ivory is a free agent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, he's maybe
Chris
a restricted
Ivory.
One, though.
But he's a restricted one. But guess what? What can I, you know, they have four running backs.
Yep.
They can afford to part with one.
Well, here's what I thought they would do. You know, I actually thought, here's what I think is going to happen. All right. I could see them getting that third round pick. Okay. And it's funny you brought up that Chris Ivory, because this is the way I was thinking. When I said Bettis type move, I could see them putting a package together because he's still not that expensive and going after Ingram. And make it him and his exclusive running back, because they're going to get a third round pick for Sanders to go with their own third round pick. I mean, you mean to tell me 2 third round picks can't get them a decent running back from off of somebody's roster? You know, I could see that happening. The guy I really wanted him to get, there's a couple of guys I really like that I think they could have gotten for cheap. One of them was Joik Bell from Detroit. Yep. And the reason I say that, now he can come cheaper now, he's the same type running back as Reggie Bush. Not as explosive and fast, but can catch the ball out of the backfield. I think he was the number two receiver after Calvin Johnson was Joik Bell. Can run for 100 yards, is good at the goal line. I mean, he was a well-rounded back that is going to just get buried on the roster with Detroit now. When you have LeSure and maybe Javon Best comes back, he's like their third string running back. he was one that I looked at as a potential game changer for the offense for Pittsburgh. Another one was Jackie Battle. For a big guy, could catch the ball out of the backfield. And he was pretty productive when he played for San Diego before, when Ryan Matthews was hurt. You know, these are guys you can probably get, very cheap, that are better than Dwyer, better than Redmond. They just can't seem to, it's almost like laziness. They want guys who know the system and don't want to take the time to get anyone up to speed from the outside to learn the system. It drives me crazy as a Steelers fan.
I agree. And if anything, you know what? The guy that I like better than both of those guys that's sitting as the guy outside that is getting ready to get dropped is Kevin Smith from Detroit. You know,
yep.
He's already he's sitting out there and talking about getting somebody on the cheap. That guy,
yep.
You know, he was very productive when they not last year but the year before. He was extremely productive when they kept having injury after injury and drug bust after drug bust on running back. He came in and he did very, very well in 2011.
Oh, I agree. And he was good until he kept getting hurt. I mean, and this is the thing with Detroit. If you're in a need for a running back, and if you have draft picks and you have maneuverability, I mean, that's where I'm looking. I mean, you could probably pull the shore from them. But I just think Joy Bell, and then, like you said, Kevin Smith or someone, I mean, what are your, I mean, I don't know if they can withdraw the offer or what, but, I mean, Isaac Redmond didn't do anything for me. He had one good game against the Giants, and same thing with Dwyer. They didn't really show me that they were, you know, someone who's going to lead that offense and be a productive part of that offense.
Oh, breaking news. Dante Stallworth was in a hot air balloon accident on Saturday and is in a Miami area hospital.
Yeah. Well, I don't get these guys.
Yeah, the balloon hit some power line.
I mean, all you can do is laugh. I mean, really, I don't know what else to do other than laugh. I mean, you're a free agent, NFL, I mean, chance to make, you know, so much money. I think sometimes, dude, I don't begrudge the NFL player, any athlete, for making as much money as they can. I begrudge the guy who may not appreciate it. I mean, that guy's an accident waiting to happen. You know, these guys should go to work for like a month, like in an actual job. Maybe they'd appreciate what they have and take it a little bit more seriously, not be goofing around in hot air balloons, you know? I mean, seriously.
This is the same guy that was getting high in the car and killed a guy a few years ago.
Yep. And I don't think he served any jail time, did he?
No, he didn't.
So,
matter of fact,
no,
it was the same year that Plaxico Burress shot himself and ended up in prison.
Yeah. I mean, it's again, these guys, I mean, he had all the talent in the world, you know, but never really lived up to it. Never lived up to it in New Orleans. Had some production in New England, didn't do anything in Cleveland other than I think that's where when he killed somebody. I think he was with the Browns at the time. Didn't do anything. I think it was Baltimore maybe he was with. I mean, he's just someone who's just underachieved his whole career. And if I'm an NFL GM, I'm straying as far away as possible from him, especially now that he got hurt with an F fluke accident.
I agree. Okay, in MMA, I'm all over the board today.
Yeah.
Cain Velasquez jumped back into the top 10 after his big heavyweight win over Junior Dos Santos. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the MMA fighting or not.
Nope, I wouldn't be able to name anybody in that, so I'll let you talk about it all you want.
Okay, Velasquez checked into the poll at number 6 in the rankings after his victory over Dos Santos. Demetrius Johnson was the beneficiary of a high-profile win, jumping up 2 spots to number 9. From number 9 to number 7 after defeating John Dodson in an exciting flyweight title fight on Fox. I watched that fight. That was awesome. I mean, they were just toe-to-toe. It was one of those, you know, I'm not giving up. You know, I'm taking you out. And both sides, and they were taking some serious haymakers off each other. And then light heavyweight champion Benson Henderson jumped in from spot 6 to 5, replacing Dos Santos, who fell out of the top 10. Frankie Edgar slipped from 7 to 8, and Gilbert Melendez dropped from 8 to 9 to accommodate Johnson's move upwards. Number 1 is Anderson Silva. in the rankings right now. He's a UFC middleweight champion, 31-4. His last outing, he knocked out Stephen Bonner in the first round back last October. John Jones, who I think is a beast, he reminds me a little bit of, in the NBA, the guy that was traded from the Thunder to the James Harden. He reminds me of James Harden a little bit, the way he looks. But this guy is a UFC light heavyweight champion right now, and he is 17-1 overall. And his last outing that I actually watched this one here, he defeated Victor Belfort back in last September. His next title fight is against Shaol Sonnen, and that's going to be a beast of a fight. That's going to bring in a lot of dough. Georges St. Pierre, my overall favorite fighter, he's ranked number 3 in the world. He's a welterweight. He's a UFC welterweight champion. He's 23-2. He defeated Carlos Condit back in November. His next fight is against Nick Diaz, who is a hell of a fighter in his own right. Number 4 is Jose Aldo. He's the UFC featherweight champion. He's ranked number 4 overall with a 21-1 record. He knocked out Chad Mendes in January of last year. And his title fight is against Frankie Edgar, who is another tough fighter there. Benson Henderson is ranked number 5. He's the UFC lightweight champion, and he's 5 overall. 17-2. He defeated Nate Diaz last December. He has a title fight coming up with Gilbert Melendez. Cain Velasquez, as I mentioned earlier, he jumped in at number 6 from out of the top 10, and he's a UFC heavyweight champion. He's 11-1. He has nothing scheduled up to this point because it just recently happened. Demetrius Johnson, who just dropped from 6-7. He's the UFC flyweight champion, 17-2-1. Notice they put all their guys in regardless of weight class. Last outing, he defeated John Dawson, who I thought was going to book this guy, but he didn't. But he beat him on this past January. Frankie Edgar, we just talked about him, how he lost to Benson last August. He's a 14-4 record. He's a featherweight. His next fight up is Jose Aldo. They don't have any problem fighting each other in the top ranks like a lot of the other fighters do. They dodge each other. If you don't fight at least one ranked player in 365 days, you move out of the top 10, and your rankings is based on how much more money you make. Frankie Edgar, like I said earlier, he lost to Benson. Number 9 is Gilbert Melendez. He's a lightweight, 21-2 record. He defeated Josh Thompson last May. He has a fight with Benson Henderson coming up pretty soon. And then Renan Barao, he is the interim bantamweight champion for the UFC, 29-1. He defeated Uriah Faber last July. He has a fight coming up with Michael McDonald. So being in Las Vegas, you get used to the UFC because this is the headquarters for it, and all the hotels they have it there, you know, have it live there, and some of the sites you can go in for free. So when I get opportunities, I actually make the time to sit there and check out a couple of the fights.
Well, we're
going to go to a commercial break right quick, and then we'll be right back for Sports Addict.
We are so pleased to announce ESP Botanicals is now sponsoring Freedomizer Radio. They have a bath and body line of products made for keeping your skin beautiful and healthy, but it's also for psoriasis, eczema, rosacea, and dermatitis treatment. They are meticulously prepared skincare products made from the best botanicals available. Committed to buying only from the growers when they can and using the highest quality cold-pressed oils, botanical organic additives, the best steam-expressed essential oils, and the least processed carrier oils that are available in today's marketplace. Pamper yourself or someone special in your life. Give the gift of beautiful, glowing skin. ESPBotanicals.com. Thank you so much for supporting us at Freedomizer Radio.
Welcome back to Sports Addict. With me is Chris from the Blitz. And also on the show at this time is Jim Becker, who is the GM of the St. Louis Hammerheads in my Red Zone Blitz Fantasy Football League. And what he is here to do today is to give us an overview of his team and what he plans to do and as far as getting back into championship format, as he has a tough ride in front of him with his key rival, Philadelphia Bubonic Rat Don Taylor, just won the championship in that league this past off season. So, Jim, looking at your team, we'll go ahead and start at, and we're only going to, this is an individual defensive league, but we're only going to talk about the offensive side of the ball. If as we go further, we can possibly move on to the defensive side, but it's based on the time slot grouping at this time. So at on the offensive side of the ball, you have at quarterback, you have Drew Brees, and you also have Blaine Gabbert and Chad Henne. Give me your thoughts on what your strategy is for your quarterback position.
Well, strategy I'd like to have is to have a good young quarterback to back up Drew Brees, but I don't really have that. I took a shot on Gabbert, and it looks like he's kind of folding up on me here, so that's why I made sure I picked up Henne last year, and I made sure to tag him as a free agent this year and hold on to him, because at least that way, you know, one of those guys ought to be starting in Jacksonville, Gabbert or Henne, and I've got somebody to back up Brees. That's the only thing I'm worried about. I mean, obviously, I'm rolling Brees out there every week that he's healthy, except for his bye. So that was my thought there. I just wanted to kind of like double down and make sure that I had one of the guys that was going to be starting in Jacksonville as a replacement.
Okay. And I see what you're saying there. I actually see what you're saying there. But I think Gabbert and Henne also had the same bye week as Brees, if I'm not mistaken.
Again. You're
well,
right.
We don't know.
I do this every year.
Well, we don't know yet because we have to see the doggone new schedule when it comes out. But we gotta see if that's gonna still be the case.
This happens to me. This happens to me every year. I'll have to find somebody out there, I guess. Make a trade.
Well,
for somebody
they haven't
or
released
something.
A schedule, so that might be okay. Now at running back, I really like your running back group. You have Chris Johnson, C.J. Spiller, Mark Ingram, and Ben Tate. Do you see any plans of making a move for another running back?
Well, I got the fourth overall pick. If I hold on to it, yeah, I'll probably grab a running back there. But I really haven't decided if I'm going to hold on to it or move down, because there's a whole, from what I'm reading and understand, pretty much there's a whole group of running backs that are all kind of like just take your pick. I mean, pick your poison. You know, whether it's Ivory or the guy from North Carolina or, you know, the guy from Clemson. I don't know. There seems to be quite a few running backs. So if I stay at four, you know, I'll probably definitely take a running back. If I decide to trade down and move down, I don't know if any of those guys will be there or not.
Right. And then, like, Stephon Johnson will be out there from Stanford. Monty Ball will still be out there. So, and you're right. You with that pick, adding a running back.
Giovanni Bernard, that's the guy from North Carolina. Yeah.
Right. Now, is it possible that you would possibly look at quarterback depending on the circumstances there at the number four pick overall?
Nah, I really don't think so. I don't think the same thing. I mean, you got like three or four or five guys, but nobody's really, you know, as far as I can tell, nobody's really pulled away from anybody and shown that they're the man. You know, I mean, you could probably, I mean, Geno Smith and Barkley and Tyler, the guy from
Tyler
Arkansas.
Tyler Wilson from Arkansas.
Yeah, the guy from Arkansas. I mean, they're all pretty much same thing. I mean, they're, you know, that's how everybody's been saying, you know, there's no RG3s or no Lux in this draft. So I'm really, I mean, I probably wouldn't take one of those quarterbacks at the fourth overall pick. No, I'd probably wait. Maybe if I trade down, I'm kind of in a tough spot because I've got that fourth overall, but then I don't pick again until the fourth round. So that's why I may be looking to trade down and pick up a late first and try to pick up a second or an early third or something.
Right. Now, if one of those guys that we just discussed, that quarterback, fell to was selected by Arizona or Buffalo, would that be a consideration?
Not really. I don't think that those guys, Arizona and Buffalo, aren't exactly known to be quarterback factories. I mean, if the people running Arizona and Buffalo think that the guy that they're taking is the answer for their franchise, then there might be something wrong with the guy.
I don't think that's what they would probably be thinking. I think they would probably be saying that the person that they select is better than John Skelton or Tavares Jackson.
Well, but my point is, they thought Cobb was the guy, you know, in Buffalo. They thought Fitzpatrick was the guy, you know. I mean, and they're both gone. So I mean, I don't necessarily trust the talent. Their view on talent at picking quarterbacks.
Gotcha. Okay. Now at your wide receiver spot, you have an abundance. You have Doug Baldwin, John Baldwin, Jordy Nelson, Reuben Randall, Jerome Simpson, Reggie Wayne, to name a few.
Yeah, I've never been so fat at wide receiver before. This is the first time in any fantasy league I've ever been this wide receiver heavy.
Now, was a lot of this due to the free – well, we haven't gotten to wide receivers yet in the free agency yet, have we?
Yeah.
So, wow.
That's where I got Nelson and Reggie Wayne at.
Okay, right, because of the fact that they were tagged, yes.
Yeah, I had to give up my one to get Jordy Nelson and a three to give up – or to get Reggie Wayne.
Right, and you ended up with a three from a one from someone else, which puts you in the driver's seat.
Yeah, I lost Ray Rice.
Right.
Well, I let Ray Rice go. I mean, I could have matched him, but it wouldn't have been worth it for all those bucks.
Correct.
I would have been totally handicapped on doing anything else.
Now at tight end, you have Ed Dixon. That's going to be interesting, especially with the dynamics of that team at this point. Jermaine Gresham and Ben Watson. He's defying Father Time at this point.
Yeah, I only picked him up for a couple years as a backup for Gresham. Now with Dixon, I really haven't, you know, I've had Dixon for a couple years and I really haven't got much out of him, but they're saying, I'm reading where Pitt is getting some talk at other places. Pitt is getting interviewed at other places. He's restricted. I don't know what kind of tag they got on him, but he's restricted. But the way Baltimore's been letting these guys walk, I mean, who knows if somebody offers something good for Pitta, Dixon may be the starter there this year. You never know.
That's true. Now, on the defensive side of the ball, actually, we do have a little time to hit the defensive side of the ball. Where do you think is your biggest area of concern or need?
Well, it's got to be DBs because all I got left is Eric Wright, Jeremiah Bell, and Antoine Roll. And Eric Wright just got – did he get cut by Tampa Bay? Or he's going to get cut by Tampa Bay. And then Jeremiah Bell just signed a 1 year with who'd he sign with?
Who's that?
Jeremiah Bell just signed a 1 year with Arizona, was it?
Yeah, it's Arizona. Arizona.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, I'm in trouble there. The only guy I really got consistently that I can count on is Antoine Roll. I'm pretty good at linebacker. I got – Lofton, I got Sean Witherspoon for another year, and then Cleveland just moved Jabal Sheard to linebacker, so that helped me. That kind of helped me out there. And at defensive line, I think I'm pretty well set with Mario Williams, Cameron Wake, and Croy Bierman. I don't think I have any issues there for a couple years.
Right, and so do you view Jeremiah Bell being a safety in Arizona as a negative?
Well, just the fact that it was just a one-year contract. I got him signed for three more years.
Right.
He's gone from the Dolphins to the Jets. Now he's in Arizona, and that's he was only with the Jets, what, a couple of years?
Yeah.
1 year? I mean, he's getting up there in age, and it's not good that he's bouncing around like he is. I mean, if he only does 1 year in Arizona, I still got him on the books for two more years. I'm definitely – at some point in this draft, I'm definitely going to have to get some DBs.
Got it. And overall, based on your division layout, how do you view your team as far as what place they're coming in? And
I think actually it's kind of crazy, but I mean, you said Rats won the championship last year. I won the championship last year. Well, this year. I won the championship this year.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's right. I keep mixing you two up.
Don't do that. Don't mix us up.
You got it. Sorry about that.
Yeah, right. No, I'm the defending champion. And even though I lost Ray Rice, I actually think my team's better. Because the way I looked at it was, before I got the Reggie Wayne and Randall and Nelson, my receiving core was just terrible. My top receiver averaged me 4 points a game last year, and I still was able to win the championship. This year, I lost Ray Rice, but I got Nelson and Reggie Wayne. And actually, if I take my starting lineup and I compare starting Ray Rice with my top receiver, who was Jerome Simpson, who that was only return yards he was getting me points on, but then I take them out of the equation and I put in Jordy Nelson and Reggie Wayne, I'm actually scoring more points.
Okay.
My points per game is actually going to go up after losing Ray Rice by adding these two receivers. So I think I'm in pretty good shape.
Okay, Chris, do you have any questions for Jim?
As far as trading, have you made any trades or anything to try and upgrade your team, trading picks, or are you just pretty much building your team through, you know, signing free agents and the draft?
Yeah, well, this year I made a trade with Jerry and got Reuben Randall. So hopefully,
what did you give up for him?
What did I give up? I can't remember. I got a 3 in Reuben Randall, and I gave up, I think, a two next year.
In the future.
A 2 next year, and then, what was it? What did we decide on, $20?
We had 20 fantasy bucks.
Yeah. But like I said, I got some feelers out there. I'm going to put some feelers out there about moving this number 4 overall pick, maybe moving back down in the first round to like 8, 9, or 10, and then try to pick up that and a second round pick, see if anybody wants to do that. If somebody's got somebody in particular in mind they really want to shoot for and they want to move up to 4, maybe we could work something out.
Where do you think you need your biggest upgrade besides defensive back? What about on the offensive side of the ball? If you could, zone in on a player,
there's no one particular. You mean like in a trade?
Yeah, if you were to make a move at this point, if you were to make a trade, I mean, what type of, you know, where do you think you need? You need a running back.
Oh yeah, I'd love to lock up another running back. But the thing with that is, I really only make trades for guys if I can have them for a while. You know,
right.
I mean, I wouldn't even trade for Arian Foster if he was going to be a free agent in 2 years. I mean, that just wouldn't make any sense. So, what I'm looking for is, I only got Chris Johnson for one more year. I'll probably re-tag him. I got Spiller for 4 more years. I got Ingram for 5 more years. He better start doing something. I heard a comment you made earlier about trading him to Pittsburgh. That sounds pretty good. That sounds pretty good to me.
that'd be
great for me if he became the guy in Pittsburgh. But I mean, I'm always looking for another running back. You know,
I look at Ingram; he's just in a bad spot. I thought when they signed or drafted him, moved up to get him, I was like, yeah, but it just makes this Saints team unstoppable. But they just have such a carousel at running back.
Well, Sean Payton even said himself that the only thing keeping him from being a 1,000-yard rusher is Sean Payton.
The only thing I didn't like about that I noticed about Ingram is he's really not good with short yardage. You think a guy his size, you know, and so forth, he'd be a good goal line or short yardage person. He really hasn't excelled in that role. And it really, you know, I actually think Chris Ivory's probably the best back right now. Not counting Sproles, the fundamental ones actually are more of the running back. But, I'm looking at it. If I had Ingram on my fantasy team with 5 years, you know, you may be able to trade someone like that just by name brand alone. You know,
because most guys see the same thing I see.
they see him
stuck in that committee and not breaking out. And that's another thing I'm hoping for. I'm hoping for Ivory, you know, sign someplace else.
It may be tough with that one being that he's a restricted free agent. And he would be, you know, one of those guys has to go. I mean, they don't need to be that deep at running back when they're throwing offense. They throw for 5,000 yards a season.
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense. I mean, Ingram is, you know, if he was getting, you know, touchdowns, you say, all right, well, at least you could potentially get a 12-point game out of the guy. If he plugs it in twice, you know they're going to score 40 points a game. It's not unheard of to think of it. I don't get what they're. I mean, we talked about it before in our portion. I don't get what they're doing at running back. And if you have a year's cap, yeah, he may be someone just. Yeah, he may be not worth holding on to see if you can. You know, it's risk versus reward at this point with him. If he goes to Pittsburgh or another team, it's great. If he stays, you know, you're gonna have to eat that for 5 years.
Yeah, but I don't think the Saints are gonna trade him. I mean, they traded up to get him. You know,
yeah.
Specifically to go get him. So, I mean, hopefully they have some sort of a plan for him.
Yeah, I mean, I would think they would have implemented it at this point.
Well, they
know,
keep saying
year three.
They keep saying that the year that they won the Super Bowl, they ran the ball. That was the big difference, was they ran the ball so well. Well, hopefully they'll wake up and realize that's what they need to get back to doing, and they'll start running it a little bit more.
Yeah, I think their defense has been so porous the last season. You know, last couple of seasons since their Super Bowl.
They're always behind.
Yeah, I mean, they have to keep up or continue to score. They're not going to grind it out, and their defense is going to hold them. And even when they won the Super Bowl, their defense wasn't that good, but they were very opportunistic.
Well, it's because they were out there trying to kill people.
Yeah, exactly.
They had the bounty program going on.
Right, yeah. Well, without that, they obviously you see the difference in the way they play. But, you know, I mean, yeah, if you just sit – you know, in the dynasty leagues, yeah, years. You know, you kind of take that risk of, you know, the big name that you draft, giving him a lot of years and hoping that he lives up to what he did in college and is productive. And if not, I mean, that's a lot of contract years to hold on to. I mean, I'm a trader. I'll trade anybody anywhere. Jerry will tell you, I'll trade draft picks. I'll trade money. I'll trade superstars. Because I always like to say, guy. You know, the NFL today is. You don't see a lot of guys doing it for 10 years in a row. So, you know, you try and catch a guy when you think he's going to have upside and trade away the big name who's had some productive years. You think maybe on a decline, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. But I'll trade anyone. I'll trade one of my children if it'll get me a decent player on my fantasy team.
That's true. That is true. That is true. Strange you say that. That is true.
Yep.
Hey, and before we go, and Jim, I want to thank you for your overview of your team, because so you're are you predicting a back to back championship here, or do you see?
I don't see as long as Reggie Wayne doesn't fall off the map, which I don't see any reason why he should. I mean, with Luck, you know, he's 1 year older, but Luck's also got one more year of experience, you know, and he'll be looking for him. Hopefully he'll be his crutch when he's in trouble. And what really helped me was I was really holding my breath, man. I couldn't even believe Green Bay was going to re-sign Greg Jennings. With Greg Jennings going to Minnesota, that opens up Jordy Nelson a little bit more. You know,
right.
Just last year he got hurt for 4 or 5 games, but the year before that he was one of the top 5 or 6 receivers in the game. So I mean,
yeah.
You know,
I don't look at him as a true number one. I mean, when Rodgers throwing to him, of course he's going to have the production. But I mean, yeah, like I said, he's going to have
stretch. Well, no, the number one guy there is going to be Cobb.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I
think Cobb is going to really step it up and get a lot of that production. And, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if they go after a wide receiver somewhere along the line, because they only are, you know, 3 deep at wide receiver, and that's what how their offense goes. So
yeah.
I think that Nelson was better with Jennings than he'll be without him, because I don't think there's going to be a third person to roll coverage over to give Jordy Nelson that free range to run. So curious to see how the Packers counteract losing Jennings, because when he wasn't in last year, Nelson wasn't overly productive. A lot of it went to Cobb.
Well, in my opinion, watching a lot of those games, I think they overfeed Cobb. I think they to the detriment of their offense, they try to get Cobb the ball. You know, I think they try to overuse him almost.
They try to use him to the way that the Vikings used Percy Harvin.
Yeah.
I mean, cut from the same mold. Yeah, I mean, and they did that because they didn't really weren't able to run the ball. I'm curious. It's the Packers' offense is, when you have Aaron Rodgers, I mean, you can't rest on that. You got to keep weapons there for him. And losing Greg Jennings is a loss, and it's a loss to him. Rodgers, it's a loss to Jordy Nelson's potential production, and Randall Cobb will probably benefit from it, but ultimately I think it'll hurt Jordy Nelson if they don't bring someone in at least to draw coverage. That'd be good to see.
I agree.
Well, but
the good thing
still better than who I had last year.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, getting those guys in free agency is great. I mean, that's, you're getting, you know, one and one A at wide receiver, and if that was what your weakness was, you know, that's a great offseason for you. Even losing Ray Rice, who, I mean, they're going to be more of a throwing team, so, you know, I could see his production diminished, you know, having a little bit more, less of a role. And Bernard Pierce is going to get a lot more carries. That guy's good.
Yeah.
So letting Ray Rice go was I think, a good move on your end.
Well, I mean, I just couldn't do that. I couldn't. It was, what was it, 400 or something bucks? I mean, I couldn't.
Yeah.
I mean, that would have left me with, like, $10 or something. I couldn't do that. I can't understand how these guys can run their teams with like 20 bucks.
I can't either.
I just don't see how you can do it. You can't tag anybody. You can't, you know, you can't really do anything.
Yeah. You realize how important those dollars are when you're trying to round out your roster.
Right. And the guy made an obvious mistake. The guy made an obvious mistake. Won't talk about it during this show, but it will be coming up in a future show for sure, because he made a crucial mistake that he shouldn't have done, and he basically blew all of his fantasy bucks on overdoing something in the last season, and it cost him dearly.
Well, you know, that's one of the things I've been thinking about is, you know, I'm still making mistakes. I mean, I've only been doing this hardcore for like 4 years. I'm still learning how to do, you know, how to do this stuff. Everybody's going to make mistakes, you know.
Right. But yeah, that one was a big mistake. that was a huge mistake. Okay, I want to welcome to the show Jason Gonzalez. He is the GM of the San Diego Ronin, which is also in the same league as Jim and I, Red Zone Blitz. And welcome to the show, Jason. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thanks. Hey, fellas, how's it going?
Hey, what's up?
All right.
Hey, what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and take a look at your team this time and pounce on it every chance we can get.
Sure.
Well, we're going to start off with your quarterback. You definitely don't have a problem too much at quarterback. You have Sam Bradford, Andy Dalton, Mark Sanchez, Matt Schaub. Sanchez has 1 year left on his contract, so I can see why you just leave him on there and why pay five fantasy bucks to get rid of him when he's not worth paying the $5 to get rid of. So how do you view your quarterback position?
I think I'm doing well now. When the tagging free agency came up, I was surprised to get shot for, I think it was 100-something fantasy bucks, because I knew Sanchez, he wasn't going to do anything. I like to keep three active quarterbacks on my teams, and although Sanchez is currently active, he's not worth a lick. And Andy Dalton was also, you know, obviously he did fairly well last year, and I'm hoping Sam Bradford does some type of breakout some way, shape, or forms. But with Matt Schaub, I think I'm good. I'm pretty pleased with what was going on there. I only had to give up a second round, which I had two, I believe it was, and I still have the
right
round for it. So I think. I hit it pretty well with the 380 there. So
now the area that you had the biggest, that I think that you had the biggest concern with, was that running back. Now, and you have some good names running back there, but they all got hit by the bug. You have Matt Forte, Mikel LeShore, Darren McFadden, DeMarco Murray. Any concerns on possibly getting a running back?
Yeah, you know, I heard you and Jim, you guys were all talking about Ray Rice. I was actually in the sweepstakes for him, too, as well. Then I saw it go up to, like, 390, which I didn't have any money for. And even if I did, I don't think I would have sniped it that high. But, yes, on paper, you know, about 2 years ago, that was a monster. Those were my three-headed monsters. And I made a great run with those guys. And in December, Forte went out. This was 2 years ago. Forte, McFadden, and DeMarco Murray all went out almost the exact same time. And then last year it happened again with Murray going out. McFadden and Forte wasn't as sharp as he was. And Mikel sure finally got healthy after about a year or so. But then, of course, now we've got Reggie Bush in the mix there. So that is one of my biggest concerns, although it's like look at those names with their potential. It's like, how can that be my weakness? But it's because they're always injured, and it's like a carousel, which I'm trying to make up for in my wide receiving core, which I just picked up. Brandon Marshall, we'll talk about in a second, in the free agency. So I'm hoping one of those or two of those guys will stay healthy, or one of them will break out to actually produce throughout the whole season. It's what I'm really looking forward for. Hopefully.
Right.
And then at wide receiver, as you just mentioned, you have Antonio Brown, Vincent Brown, if he can stay healthy, Michael Crabtree, Marvin Jones, if he can stay healthy, Brandon Marshall.
Yeah.
How do you approach your wide receiver core?
I'm pleased with, you know, Antonio Brown. I think he's going to bump up his number one since Wallace is no longer there. Vincent Brown, again, if he could stay healthy, you know, the verdict's still out on him. But when he was in, when he was healthy a couple of years ago, he did very well. At least he was coming up. Crabtree, he tore it up towards the end of the season, especially starting getting that rapport with Colin Kaepernick. I got 1 year left with him, so I'll see how it does if or not, or I should tag him next year. But Chris Givens, with Amendola out, looks like Chris Givens might bump up a spot in the roster. And, of course, Brandon Marshall is Brandon Marshall with Jay Cutler. So I think I'm okay with wide receivers. And as I just mentioned earlier, I'm thinking instead of running three running backs next year, I'll probably have to go 2-2, or obviously if they go down, 3-1. But I think my wide receiver four just got bolstered. I gave up a round one for Brandon Marshall, but I was okay with that. I think I took a gamble, saving money from the Ray Rice sweepstakes. I got Schaub and Brandon Marshall. So I think I bolstered that pretty well. May have to look in running back for the draft. Don't know if anyone's going to be left at 2, pick 9. So we'll see how that goes.
Okay. And then at tight end, you're looking at Joel Dreesen and Rob Gronkowski. Do you have any concerns there? Because I think I would.
With Gronkowski going on four
surgeries on one arm in 2 years.
Yeah. And then he starts blowing all that money in Vegas. But, yeah, Gronkowski, yeah, his arm's really – concerned me. And again, that's one reason why I started falling last year. Again, on paper, if you look at all my team, the team when they're playing, it's like, wow, this is a monster team, but then they're all injured. You know, Gronkowski came out, was never the same when he came back, and then he broke it again, or he got another, like, four surgeries, like you said. Joel Dreesen, I kind of picked him up in draft late last year thinking, you know, Peyton Manning, and I think he did very well with the Texans, but he didn't really pan out last year, and I have no one left, so maybe my round two will be a tight end because I have no one there other than Rob Gronkowski. When he's in, obviously, we all know his potential, if he could stay healthy. That's one of my greatest concerns there. I didn't see much going off in the free agency other than Tony Gonzalez, but I don't think I'll have money to keep up with that, and he's probably only going to be around for a year or two, so why am I going to spend so much money who's going to barely came back from retirement? So it looks like I'll be going to draft at least in round two for that, unless there's a stellar running back falling in my lap, you know. And I'll just cross my fingers with Gronkowski that he'll stay healthy, and Joel Dreesen maybe if their bite, I don't know how their bites match up, but maybe one day he'll catch on fire.
Okay, now how do you view the defensive side of the ball as far as area of concern, most need?
My biggest concern is our, just like Jim, was my defensive backs. I only have Michael Griffin, but I'm going to pick that up either in free agency. I haven't checked who's in there, or obviously I'll go into draft late in the draft. So I like to pick the defensive backs kind of late, even though they do have some importance. I do like to put my emphasis on linebackers and a top-notch defensive line. As you know, I picked up Jason Pierre-Paul before he came out, and then obviously he tore it up. That year, and I believe I extended him last season, and this season he came free agency, but I was able to pick him up, although it was kind of expensive. You think some people think that's expensive for a defensive line, but for a top-tier defensive line as he is, I think it was worth it. He did carry me through some games. If I recall, he actually won a couple of games for me. One game was a Monday night a couple of years ago. It was his tackles that just pulled me over the edge, which is great, and his sacks. So my defensive line, great. Linebacker core, Patrick Willis is top-notch. Kelvin Shepherd, I believe he'll come back up. And Keith Rivers was just re-signed, but he doesn't really do much. Sean Phillips, we don't know where he's ending up. And Dante Hightower, I'm hoping with New England, he'll pick it up there. Like I said, defensive back, just going to either go into free agency or pick one up in the draft. If I have money left in my bank, I'll pick someone up there.
Got it. Jim and Chris, you have any questions?
No, I really don't.
I don't. I mean, it sounds like he's got some pretty much some depth at every level other than defense. And, you know, like I said, in a similar league as a defense, a lot of people forget how important having, you know, defensive scoring is. You know, they focus so much. And that comes from, you know, doing redraft leagues, the emphasis on the offensive players and the money in the draft picks are on the offensive players. Mm-hmm, but you don't realize having defensive players, how important they can be. I mean, if you look at it, I mean, you get a guy who gets 10 tackles, that's a pretty productive day. You know, that's where when you learn dynasty leagues and keeper leagues or leagues with IDP, you know, you'll sit in a draft and the first defensive guy won't go to like round 10, you know, because they just don't understand the value. I put humongous value on defensive players, and I make sure I have a lot of depth because of the injuries and so forth. So it sounds like, you know, you'll definitely have to do some work on the defensive side of the ball, as far as defensive backs.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, this is my second IDP league, and my other IDP is a redraft, and linebackers go as early as the top-notch linebackers like Patrick Willis. They'll go in sixth or seventh round, although people think, oh, that's insanely high, but the tackles, people don't understand how important that can be. A 10-tackle linebacker, that's 10 points in some leagues. That's huge. If you have, like, a second-tier linebacker, you're going to get nothing. You're going to get scraps. And I think it's really important for IDPs that people realize the emphasis on defense. And I'm trying to fix my defensive back situation, but I think I'll be okay on that.
Well, that's one of the things I meant when I meant I'm still learning about this stuff is when I saw that – I can't remember whose team he was on, but – you know, I tagged Ray Rice with a franchise tag, and then I saw that Laurinaitis got tagged with a franchise tag, and I was like, Laurinaitis, a linebacker with a franchise tag? Well, then I went and looked, and he averaged as many points a game as Ray Rice did.
Yeah. And that's what a lot of people think. Well, and you watch over time, and here's the thing, though, that's tricky with, and I always try to be careful with that, is with defensive players, is it's fluctuate so much from year to year. You have three or four per position that are going to do it every year. And then you're going to have the guys who have a really big 1 year, and then you're like, oh, I got to give this guy a five-year contract, and the next year he does half the points. You know, I mean, especially at defensive backs. You look at guys like Jarius Byrd or, you know, Jordan Babineau or players like that had humongous years, and you're like, I got to get this guy, or, you know, Reggie Nelson, I got to extend him, I got to do a – and then the following year, they drop off. And then the following year, they're so-so. It's, you know, it really, if you don't have the high-end player, who like a Patrick Willis, a Laurinaitis, you know, a Polamalu when he wasn't hurt, you know, or Ed Reed, you know, and so forth. If you don't have those type players, you know, Julius Peppers or, you know, Jared Allen. I mean, you know, they are pretty much a dime a dozen. And you can go year to year, and if you could call it right, be productive and have good corner, good defensive players without making the long-term commitment with the guys. So, I mean, I've watched that happen, and I've been doing IDP league for over 10 years. You know, you got to be careful sometimes with IDP because the superstars will continue to do it. But if you jump on a guy who, like a Richard Sherman, would be a perfect example. Everyone will be all over Richard Sherman. He may not have the production he had last year, but somebody who probably put a five-year contract or spend a lot of a lot of money to sign him. So it's tough fishing with IDP. You really got to know what you're doing with it, and it can be tough.
You know, and the other thing about Richard Sherman is at some point, and I'm predicting this upcoming season, his mouth is going to outweigh his production.
Well, right, right, exactly. Someone's going to go after his knees. It's definitely a situation where if you have a league that keeps track of like year to year what players do, you'll watch how many points players total points fluctuate year to year on the IDP side. And if you talk, let's say 40 points, they say, oh, that's not a big deal. That's 3 or 4 points a game. How many close games have you lost in a year that you say you wish you had those points? You know, so it's definitely IDP can be very, very tricky. That's IDP separates the men from the boys, the leagues with IDP,
Another time people fall under with the defensive backs through the names, and especially with lockdown corners, they think, oh, because they're great in the NFL, the lockdown corners, but they can do jack for the fantasy because no one throws to them. No, they don't tackle, but they're great on the field. So people will lock up a lot, Darrell Revis, Antonio Cromartie. But Cromartie had a good year with Chargers with all those interceptions. After that, it was just because he's just such a great cover quarterback, people thought, oh, yeah, I got to pick him up. But he won't do anything for fantasy.
I only look at tackles. When I look at IDP, I look at tackles only. The other stuff is just, you know, the gravy on it. If a guy's getting 2 or 3 tackles a game, well, he's not getting a sack a game, and he's not getting an interception a game. So chances are, if you only look at a guy who had, you know, sacks, well, it fluctuates so much. He's going to get 10, 12 sacks. So there's going to be, you know, 4 to 7 games you think about where he's going to get under, you know, maybe 5 or 6 points or less.
Mm-hmm.
I strictly look at consistency of tackling because that's where you get your points.
I lost the championship a couple of years ago. I'll never forget who it was who had Antoine Winfield. But I mean, I'll never forget this play. Antoine Winfield blitzes Michael Vick. The
sack
corner
picks up the ball and scores.
Yeah, he blitzes him. He gets a sack, a strip fumble, and a touchdown.
And
I lost the Super Bowl on that play.
Yep, I actually had that in a play. I actually had him. I was eliminated, but I remember seeing it saying, you know, of all the weeks to do that, I remember he sacked him to get the points there, you get the tackle, sack, force fumble, fumble recovery, and touchdown. That's to get it all on that one.
Yeah, and it got the guy like 30 points in one play or something outrageous. That cost me the Super Bowl.
Right, and that's what you look at with cornerbacks. Like most of the defensive backs, you're going to look at safeties because they get the most tackles, they get big blitz, and get sacked. If you can get a corner like that who can you know, get tackles for you, I mean, that's all I look at. I don't care what position they play, inside, outside. If they're getting tackles, and that's where guys like James Harrison and Clay Matthews, it's you know, hit or miss with those guys. They don't get a lot of tackles as a 3-4 outside linebacker, but they'll get the big impact plays. But they may go a stretch of 4 or 5 games where they don't do anything other than maybe a sack in there with a few tackles sprinkled in. But you fall in love with what they do at the end of the year, but you get it all 1 or 2 games, it doesn't help you on a week-to-week basis. So it's real tough to ensure you're putting the right players in.
Yep. I went after I actually picked up Chad Greenway, and a couple of people came up to me and says, well, I'm getting Clay Matthews and I'm getting A.J. Hawk. And I go, okay, no problem. I have Greenway.
Yeah.
But if you look at the tackles, Greenway, he'll get you 8 to 10 or more tackles a game. And that's the reason why I went after Greenway. And Hawk was in second place in tackles. And, Matthews gives you a different dimension on the field, but in actuality, he doesn't give you the points.
Right.
Yeah, you got to think of Chris Jackson's, Laurinaitis, Patrick Willis is out there.
Gerard Mayo is a big one.
Look
at guys who get you the tackles. Like I said, in our league that Jerry and I are in, TBL2, I'm going to franchise one player, then we have a transition tag that we can put on another player for a second-round pick, and I'm actually going to go with Gerard Mayo over Antonio Gates, only because I just think, you know, somebody like that, he's consistent every year with tackles. He's not old yet. I'd rather not lose him than Antonio Gates. I'd rather go in a bidding war with Antonio Gates than take the chance of probably losing a Gerard Mayo, because I put that much value on linebackers, especially those that tackle. And that's why last year I lost Desmond Bishop, who I thought would have been the number one linebacker in total points because the guy gets sacks, interceptions, and a ton of tackles. As soon as he went down in preseason, you know, there was no real recovering from that, you know. So it's really important, IDP. And it's difficult to play in a league without it. I'm in one league, redraft league, without it. And it's kind of almost like it's difficult. It's not as challenging, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
And we're in the same division, aren't we?
I don't think we are. I'm in with Buddha. I'm in with Frank. You know, and I'm in the Flat Nuts and Wookie Strokers. So I think it's Wookie Strokers. Yeah. So we're in the same conference.
I just went over there to make sure. I can't remember. Yeah. I'm in. Yeah, we're in the same conference. I'm in with Walking Dead and Barrister Big. Blitzkrieg and the Dirty Mike's Boys.
Yep. So again, it's there's no never. You know, it's a good thing about these dynasty leagues is it's year round. You know, you're doing stuff in April and May and June when, you know, nobody's thinking fantasy football. Like I said, it's definitely it's hard to do redraft leagues when you're in leagues like a dynasty league. The mentality is totally different. A lot more challenging. It's a lot, you know, it's a lot more fun to do. You know, something I desperately needed because I've been doing fantasy football since 1991. So I needed that change into something a little bit more challenging than going to a draft, you know, drafting the same players, throwing in a lineup. Nobody trades because you're stacked with a team as it is, you know, and then, you know, just putting in the lineup every week. So these dynasty leagues are great, you know, great thing to have because it keeps you into football the whole year round.
You know, it's funny. I never really thought of it in this way before. I realized I never won the league. But it's funny you mentioned that, the difference between redraft and keepers. I've won, I guess, I've run Red Zone Blitz twice in the last 4 years. I won another league Jerry and I were in a couple years ago, and I've won a keeper league the last 2 years in a row. And I've been, the first league I ever got in was a redraft league with some guys from work, and I've been in that for almost 10 years, and I've never won that.
Yep.
And I never even thought about it. I've won all these dynasty and keeper leagues in the last 3 or 4 years, and I hardly even ever get to the Super Bowl or the championship game in that redraft league. I never really even thought about that.
Well, because here's the thing. I mean, the thing with fantasy football, and there's nothing wrong with it. It's just the way it is. Everybody does it now, and there's so many. When I first started doing fantasy football, again, we're talking 1,000 years ago. You know, everything was done by newspaper. There weren't fantasy football books. You had to go in and know football. You had to know the players. There was no cheat sheets. There was no internet. There was nothing other than your brain to draft. And then what happens is, you know, then it came to the point where it became a little more mainstream. There were magazines and then obviously with the internet and everything else. So now my wife could technically win any redraft fantasy football league. Because all she needs to do is know who the players are, keep track of them, and when they get hurt, make sure she puts in. Everybody can do it. Anybody can win. Where in a fantasy, in a redraft league or a keeper league, you got to know the players. You're making actual moves. You have to know something about football and a little bit more about the players. Instead of, you're not really dwelling on what they did the year before. So anybody can win a redraft league, and it doesn't mean, and just because you're a like myself, I consider myself pretty knowledgeable in football and fantasy football. I mean, my team names are the football guru. I lose out to people who just started because all you need to do is go on the internet and get all the information they need. They're not really using their football knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Where you have to do that in a redraft league and a keeper league and a dynasty league. So that's why I said it's difficult to do it. I'm in a work league and I'm kind of do it because I'm forced to do it type of thing. But ultimately, anybody can win those type of leagues. So you don't need to be skilled at it at all. It's all luck.
That's true. And to validate that, I've been doing fantasy football since the late 80s, and like 88, and we were using a newspaper, and then I got a computer in late 88, and then in 89, I bought this software where I can upload into a bulletin board service, and then every week it would print out, it would update my computer. Then I would print out sheets for everybody in the league and take it back to them the following day at work, and that's how we actually managed the thing. And then they would feed into me who they wanted to start, and I would key it into the doggone thing, so it'll update the following weekend, you know, or after Monday night game.
Much more sophisticated than we ever were. We were in our work league. It was, you know, you had to call your lineup into my answering machine by whatever date, or hand me the lineup by, you know, the whatever time we had, the 12 o'clock on Sunday, to give your lineup in. And then again, it was, you had to wait till, you know, Monday and Tuesday, because you would look on the, you had to calculate all the points via the, you know, the newspaper. You know, there weren't really tickers on the bottom, and, you know, on TV and all these shows. It was a lot of work. You'd have arguments because some said, no, I got this many points. No, you miscalculate, and everything else would happen. A lot more sophisticated now, and you know, it's obviously already grown the biggest sport in the world twofold by just all the people now that just watch football for fantasy football purposes. It's grown the popularity, but you know, a lot of people only watch, like, the Red Zone Channel. They don't even watch an actual football game from start to finish. You know, they'd rather just want to see how the guys are doing in fantasy football instead of worrying about, all right, how did my favorite team do? I'm going to watch from kickoff to the end of the game. on how my football team does. Now it's just red zone blitz, red zone blitz, red zone blitz. So it's changed the way we watch football.
It has. I want to point out also in April, Sports Addicts will be hosting a three-person keeper league, and I will be rolling it out. And the people that I'm going to give first option to it are people that I know that are not in fantasy football leagues that I'm familiar with, and then I will roll it out behind that with other individuals. And I have the ability to run four 16-team leagues out of it. And it's basically a free league, bragging rights, and that's about it. But you get to keep up to three. You can keep 0, 1, 2, or 3 players and, you know, the following season. And whatever pick that you got them in, you lose that pick. If you decide to keep them the following season, you automatically have to give up two picks from that last pick that they had. So, like, for example, if you get somebody in the seventh round and you want to keep them, you have to give up the seventh round pick. If you keep them a second year, it's a fifth round pick. You can never keep anybody that was picked in the first two rounds. So once that fifth round pick turns into a third and then a first, once they hit the one button, the one line, you can't keep them either. So it's going to be interesting where the top players keep rolling back into the league for the people that are, you know, new people coming in and people going out. And the goal is to take the last four records, regardless of the division that they're in, and they have to sit out 1 year. They can come back after that 1 year, but they have to sit out 1 year to let new talent in. So the goal is never to waste a game.
Nice little twist there, different.
Yeah. So, and it won't be defensive players involved. It'll be just an offensive and defensive team layout. But it's something simple and something just to keep the radio show moving as well.
Cool.
With that in mind, hopefully I can get all three of you on the show next week. It's about time for us to shut down at this point. I want to thank you, Chris. Too bad we couldn't get Ryan on due to personal commitments and everything, but I want to thank you for coming on the show, and it was fun discussing the NFC team need. And the goal is to get you back, hopefully with Ryan, after the NFL draft and sometime in May, so that we can grade the teams, and we'll do the AFC first, and then follow it again by the NFC, and give them grades based on what they've done in the offseason plus the draft. And then also I want to thank you, Jim, for showing up to discuss the St. Louis Hammerheads.
Anytime I can.
And honestly, when you let the – I knew that the guy that was bidding on Ray Rice had more fantasy bucks than everybody else. So I knew that.
I was counting on it. I told you that. Remember, I said, where's Denver at? He's got – I was counting on getting that fourth overall pick. That's one of the reasons I let him go.
Right.
That was part of my strategy. I looked at everybody's bucks before I let them go, and I said, Denver's probably going to get them. And then Denver wasn't bidding, and I was, like, freaking out. Why isn't Denver bidding?
Exactly. Exactly. And for the most part, I looked at your team, and I was like, okay, you lost Ray Rice, but you have these guys for running back. And then I looked at it again, and I'm going, he just picked up Reggie. But, wow, he just picked up Jordy Nelson. And I'm going, it looks strong. For some reason, your team, even though it had a shift on the running back side, an obvious shift on the running back side, on the wide receiver side, it looks like it kind of balanced itself out.
Yeah,
so
I actually think that with adding those two guys and then with the fourth overall pick, if I pick somebody or if I trade and pick up two picks for it, I think my team's actually going to be better next year. You know, that's, of course, assuming that, you know, nobody gets hurt.
Right,
but,
and that's
know.
The other variable in play.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
All right, but yeah,
then,
I appreciate you having me on.
Okay, and then
thanks,
also, Jason, I want to thank you for coming in and piping in on the San Diego Ronin. And the one question we didn't ask you is, where do you think
you're going to
play next year in your division?
It's tough. I was looking at Grant's and San Jose's. San Jose was big building, and he's got a pretty good team coming up. He's got Andrew Luck. He's got Julio Jones. So it's going to be a tough call this year, I think it is. And, again, if my running backs can stay healthy, I feel like should be right in it. We ended up like 7-6 and 7-5-1 in this in the top three, and I scored over 2,100 points, and I ended up second place. So I hope these guys stay healthy. If it is, and I could definitely win that division again, or that conference again. I think I won it last a couple years ago, but again, stay healthy. I think I'll be fine. Thanks for having me on, Jerry.
Thank
you. Luck, guys.
And I'd like to have you guys on anytime you want, and it'd be great just to sit down and talk different sports as we go along. And I appreciate you showing up, and everyone who's listening to the show and piping in via the website. I want to thank you as well, and have a great day.